The following is a Stick Boy We Talk production.
The following contest scheduled for one fall.
I am the man.
If you're the man, what the rock is talking. Woo! The best there is.
Welcome to a special 200th episode of the One Fall Podcast, hosted by We Talk Podcast. I'm your host, Joel Johnson. It's been quite a journey these last 200 episodes, filled with some of the best and worst pro wrestling had to offer. On today's episode, there are five special interviews with people that have appeared on this podcast to talk about pro wrestling. To kick things off, we're going to hear from the old buck, Douglas Winnipeg. But I am joined by the old buck. You may have heard him on such classic podcasts as talking about SummerSlam 2018, 2019, something along those lines. I'm joined by Douglas Winnipeg. How are you, Doug?
Yeah, I'm doing all right.
So as you know, this is all talking about pro wrestling, and we're talking more about you today. So I think we'll jump right in. First question is, how did you get into pro wrestling, Doug?
I've told you the story before, but it's kind of just been my entire family has been into pro wrestling my entire life. My grandmother was a big fan, and so, because of that, my brothers and myself were all big fans of professional wrestling, and just kind of. We inherited it through her, I suppose.
Oh, I think that is a lot of ways for a lot of wrestling fans. I do feel like there is that you get – it's not just something that kind of naturally happens. You either get introduced to it by a friend or a family member, and then it just kind of becomes a thing. What era did you start watching? What's your first memories of pro wrestling?
I remember – well, of course, I remember Raw. I remember on Saturday mornings, a local Calgary television station, or maybe it was Saturday afternoons, I don't remember, had wrestling, had WWE wrestling, and those are my earliest memories of actually watching wrestling with my family. But I think just because of my age, anything just pre-Attitude Era, I started really watching WCW when that got really good. And then when the Attitude Era was in full effect at WWE, I think that was also the time that was all during the time when we'd watch it every single Monday for years on end. So
it's fascinating because that time period is just looked back on in so many different ways, and like you look at that Monday Night Wars, and it's incredible to see how popular pro wrestling was at the time. What did you think when things started to ramp up? Because you said you were watching prior to the Attitude Era. How did you feel about that ramp up to the Attitude Era?
So I'm just trying to think. As I said, the earliest memories of me watching wrestling took place on Saturday mornings when we would watch a local Calgary television station, and they would show wrestling every Saturdays, on Saturdays, I should say. I also remember local promotions coming through my home reserve. I'm native, but they would come through, and so I guess those are like early memories before the Attitude Era. But I would say like WCW. I remember watching wrestling like WWF wrestling, and thinking it was just really lame at the time. And then WCW had like this new exciting product, and so I remember my brothers and I started watching. At first, we got the cassette, the videotape cassettes of like Bash at the Beach and stuff like that. Like I never saw any of those live, but we did see them afterwards. And then eventually, we were watching Nitro every single Monday, and we were the quintessential Monday Night Wars family where. When WCW was destroying WWF or E, we were watching WCW, and then as the WWE product got better, we would do this thing where we would watch between commercials, where between commercials we would jump between the two products, and eventually, you know, WCW's creative side and excitement faded, and then the attitude was in full effect over in WWE, the attitude era. And so that's, for me, that's kind of, I would even say that's kind of how all of my experience pre-attitude era was.
Oh, no, that is interesting, because I myself was always WWE, WWF, Rock Austin. That's really my first memories of it. Kind of going within, sticking within that time frame, who were your favorites when you were growing up? Like, as you were heading into the Attitude Era and during the Attitude Era, who were your favorites? Who were you drawn to?
Well, my favorite wrestler of all time is Stone Cold Steve Austin, and that comes directly from the Attitude Era. I loved watching him. He was even to this day, in all honesty, he would still be a draw for me even to this day. But I would say that, you know what, I'm trying to think of back then. I really liked Sting. I had a Goldberg shirt. I like Goldberg back when they had the big streak going. Let's see. I'm trying to think of other people I was really excited for. Giant, who became the Big Show in WWE. I always liked Chris Jericho, Chris Benoit, Eddie Guerrero. I always liked their matches. And a lot of those guys ended up being in WWE eventually, and they all became, like, maybe not my favorite wrestlers, but right up there with some of my favorite wrestlers ever.
It's funny who, because you mentioned all those names, and at one point or another, I like those guys. It's really funny because it really speaks to just pro wrestling. If you're really good at it, you can reach an audience, and you can find that way to connect with your audience. And I think Stone Cold did it best. He was perfect for the Attitude Era. What about Austin did you like? What was the first moment that it clicked in your head about Stone Cold?
My wrestling journey is in no way different from a lot of others. Like, as I said, the Monday Night Wars, my family, we had the quintessential Monday Night War family, where as the products got better, as the ratings did their thing, we kind of stayed with how everybody else was doing it. And so for me, I didn't really know anything about Stone Cold before, like King of the Ring. Was that what it was when he beat Jake the Snake?
Yep.
I do recall, and then I recall him cutting that promo about Austin 316, and see, that's the first time I remember watching and enjoying Stone Cold Steve Austin. But I think the thing that made me the most excited for him was, and again, this was in no way different from a lot of people, he was able to, like it's basically the point where he, Vince McMahon is trying to talk him back and say, you know, you can't do this. This isn't something you can do. He's like, and it's kind of one of those things where it's kind of kayfabe almost. They're thinking, oh, Vince McMahon's breaking the kayfabe wall, and he's trying to talk Austin from doing this. But of course, you know, I was young, and of course it was them doing a work. But I think my favorite thing, and I still watch this clip every once in a while on YouTube, it's the one where Stone Cold gives Vince McMahon the stunner for the. And that to me was like, I remember physically cheering at home watching that with my brothers. And yeah, so that's and then of course from there on, like a lot of people, Stone Cold became like the best wrestler. And it's one of those things where we've talked at length about Stone Cold and Vince and stuff, but I think that was for me the reason the reason why I became such a big fan, and still am a fan today.
You mentioned kayfabe. When were you smartened up that it's not real. When was all that revealed to you?
I don't recall. I think I've always known that it wasn't 100% real. You know, like, but I also think that I think the best part is, well, one, you don't tune in. You don't tune in to because you think it's real, right? Like, it's not like MMA or UFC or whatever. At least for me, I'd say. So I don't know if I've ever truly believed that everything I was watching on with professional wrestling was 100% real. But there have been times when that was effectively, when I wasn't exactly sure if it was real or not. And those were, for me, the best times, is when you were wondering if this feud was real, or if they did it, if this thing was real, if this happened. And so maybe, you know, and again, as I was younger, it was a lot easier for me to be able to say, oh my goodness, did they really hang Big Boss Man or whatever? You know, things that now I look back and say, obviously that was faked. And I hate using the word fake, but I can't think of a better word right this second. But so I don't know if I have ever truly believed in 100% kayfabe, but there have been times when growing up that I definitely looked at a certain storyline and thought to myself, oh, I think that's happening in real life. And I've always really liked those storylines, I guess.
Now, what other memories do you have? Because you've been watching wrestling since before the Attitude Era all the way to today. What other memories in that journey stand out to you? What are moments that you're like, this, I could rewatch this moment on YouTube again?
So I really like, sometimes I'll just go on like a Stone Cold thing. Like, I fairly recently I watched the when he and Mike Tyson faced off and they're trying to do an introduction and turns into this big brawl. I remember seeing that broadcast and being like, this is the most amazing thing ever. And I threw that on just because Jericho had a thing with Mike Tyson recently, and I just remember thinking about it. And I had to go back and rewatch that clip. That was on AEW. Some other great moments I really liked was, I'm trying to think of like things that, I really like those early, like, 2000 year 2000 matches with, tag team, with the Hardy Boys, Edge and Christian, and the Dudleys. Those tables, ladders, and chairs matches are iconic, and I think they might be. I think those matches may be my favorite matches ever. And then of course they had the two matches of Undertaker versus Heartbreak Kid.
I guess now, kind of shifting gears a little bit to today's product. How do you feel about everything? How do you feel about where wrestling is standing, where AEW is, the influence that New Japan has, where everything's kind of heading and shuffling around?
I think, I admittedly, with the exception of the pay-per-views, I haven't watched a single second of, or no, that's not true. I've watched like highlights on Instagram and YouTube and stuff. But I haven't actually sat down and watched a broadcast WWE product in a very long time. Like, I would say, like, almost at least 18 months, maybe. Like, the last time I watched a Raw was the first Raw that Paul Heyman took over for, like, a year and a half ago or 18 months ago or something like that. So I haven't been following with WWE. But since then, AEW, of course, was launched, because that was around the time that that AEW started. And I've been watching that every week. I've been watching AEW every week and really enjoying it. And I've been getting into, like, you've been sending me, like, New Japan stuff that I've checked out. But I'd say that as of right now, the promotion I watch the most is AEW, and I watch almost no WWE. I just have enough knowledge to know what's kind of happening, but that's about it. I think that's a fairly common thing. there are, of course, a lot of like diehards and people like that. And so, yeah, so I watch AEW. I've been watching a little bit of stuff. But, you know, the thing about that, too, is I think that WWE is having an issue that a lot of big companies have, in the sense that they're making more money than ever, but they're not actually – there's a lot of underlying numbers that should really bother them. And for me, I look at that, and I know people, with the exception of my brother, who still watches Raw and SmackDown. I mean, maybe not SmackDown, but definitely Raw every week. Like clockwork. It's like going to church for him. Like that's how much he loves WWE. And when I asked him, I said, "Hey, well, you should check out Dynamite." And he said he wouldn't. He said he was very. I wouldn't say he actually didn't say he wouldn't. He was just really reluctant to, and it was really strange because I think he didn't want to check out Dynamite because of like some loyalty he has to WWE, and like I think he would thoroughly enjoy the Dynamite. I think he just stays away from it because he's loyal to, you know. But the thing is I also know him. I've seen him watch Raw. And I know how much he like dislikes the product, but he still tunes in every week. And so I'm never exactly sure how he feels about it. And I that shouldn't be the case. You know, the fact is WWE has the most resources. They can have access to the most resources, and they have the checkbook to open up and pick up pretty much any talent they want. And the fact is that they're struggling, and that shows something about. There's something systemic in WWE that's really hurting it. I think that in many ways has a cascading effect to like New Japan, to the independent scene, to AEW. I think the fact that a weakened WWE gives room for those companies to grow. And in the past like 10 years, maybe less, fast 5 years, you've seen these companies go from, you know, small time affairs to being much larger. I wouldn't say they're direct competition for WWE, but I think they're getting there, and I think that's just the way the entire industry is going, I guess, at this point.
What do you think of the style of wrestling right now? Because you've watched and you've seen a change in styles from pre-Attitude Era to Attitude Era to the mid-2000s, to the 2010s, to now. And you can see that there's an evolution in the style and what an audience wants. How do you feel about the more, I guess, to simplify it, the flippy shit that people do? How do you feel about that change? Does it bug you at all?
Nah, it doesn't bother me. You know, the thing is maybe had I been trained in professional wrestling, or something along that, the fact is it's, I think it's more in the head of people, when they talk about the way, like, they're like, they look back and they say, oh, you know, the way they do things now are so much worse than what they do in the Attitude Era, right? And there were people in the Attitude Era who were saying, oh, the way they're doing now is nothing compared to what they're doing in the, you know, 80s and 70s or whatever. And I'm sure back then they were saying this is nothing compared to what they did in the 20s or whatever. So I would say that it's a natural progression, but I also think that there's also room to a product should try to pander to those, right? And because there are some people who just excel at doing flips and stuff like that, and making that like a big part of their wrestling style, and there are other people who don't. And it really depends on how entertained I am, right? That's essentially what it boils down to. You can have excellent matches without having any flips at all. And the truth is wrestling, at least all the wrestling that I've really enjoyed, has always been electrifying. Like I'm thinking even back to what I said earlier about that TLC match with those three guys. There wasn't anything like how much actual wrestling, if you look back at that match, how much actual wrestling was there? Like how many times were they were they doing your typical like golden era wrestling in the early TLC matches with the Hardys and Edge and Christian and Dudley, the Dudley boys? Yeah. Probably next to none. It's just one of those things where people will say, oh yeah, this product sucks because of this, right? Or this modern product sucks. And as I said, it's kind of like a generational thing where people will look back and say somehow the earlier stuff was better, right? Just like in the future when, I don't know, however the natural progression of professional wrestling will be. But, you know, I just think it's not as important as most people, because if you're tuning into a weekly show, wrestling show, and you're hoping for very specific era based styles, I think you're setting yourself up for disappointment. And also too, you need to keep your mind open, right? There are some wrestling styles that you don't know exist that you might thoroughly enjoy, right? And there are different and there are parts of the world that have different types. Like I'm thinking the way the Japanese wrestle may not be your cup of tea, but a Japanese wrestling fan may look at it and say, oh, the American style of wrestling isn't my cup of tea. So I don't know. It's just one of those things where I just shrug my shoulders when I hear stuff like that. And I think depending on the wrestlers, how good they are in ring, what kind of stories they're telling, make anything worth watching.
My final question for you is, out of the current wrestlers, who's your favorite right now and why?
I would say the Best Friends in AEW and by extension Orange Cassidy, but strangely enough, I've never been as big of a fan of Orange Cassidy than everybody else, I think. You know, well, not everybody else, but a lot of people. But I just like that, like the Best Friends could really go, like wrestling wise. That they're great in ring. But at the same time, they're also just generally funny. And I wouldn't say that has to be an overriding quality, but I've always really enjoyed, like if you could be great in ring and also be funny, and then you have like a Kurt Angle era level of like mic ability. I'm a big fan of yours when you do stuff like that. And so for me, like as of right now, I'm excited when I see like a Best Friends match versus whoever, right? I think some of their gimmicks are hilarious. I'm really liking Shida. I think she's an excellent champion right now. And I'm talking about AEW because I don't really watch WWE. It wouldn't be fair for me to say. I do like the fact that Drew McIntyre has the belt, and I do like guys like Ricochet and Mustafa Ali, or just Ali, I guess now. Yeah, but I would say that most of my favorite current wrestlers are in AEW, and they're kind of more the mid-card guys, I'd say. So.
Yeah, no, I did not expect you to say Best Friends at all, which I think is just really neat, because I think that is the nice thing about wrestling is you can like anything. You could like you look at something like Being the Elite, you could really love something like that. You could love what WWE does. It's important to enjoy stuff, and it's good to know that. I think for them, for like Best Friends, for Shida, for by extension Orange Cassidy, it just means they've made a connection, and they wouldn't have made a connection without AEW. I think it's better, wrestling's better having AEW around. So no, I think that was a great answer, Doug. I thought this was good. It was good talking with you again. We'll have to do this more often.
Yes, thank you very much.
Any last closing remarks from you, Doug?
Let's see. No, I don't think so. I do. I really like Jericho as well. He's a legend, though, so I didn't include him in my favorite current wrestler.
We could talk about Jericho's place in wrestling right now, because it feels like you're watching him and you're like, oh, man, this guy always gets shortchanged for where he should be ranked. But I think as time goes on, I think Jericho's going to get higher and higher on that list.
I think, you know, in many ways, I actually, well, I've always been a fan of Jericho, as I said, even from like the WCW days, the Lionheart, the Jericho days. I always liked their matches, and I, of course, liked them in WWE with his Y2J stuff. I remember when he first showed up. I remember watching broadcast his first Raw. And honestly, cumulatively keeping everything together, he might be, like, probably for me, probably the greatest wrestler ever. Like, and I know that's really tough to hear, but I honestly think that he might be the, like, just based on everything that's happened to him, how he's grown, where he's been into every major company, and not only has he been in every major company, he has excelled, and now he's in many ways, like, 50 years old and still leading the charge in AEW, and I think that's brilliant, and I think if you're a wrestler and you have 1/10 of Jericho's career, I think you can consider yourself a Hall of Famer. Like, I think that he's that good. So I don't know. That's just my personal opinion on Jericho. But So he's in there as well as one of my favorite current wrestlers.
No, that's good. And that just shows the longevity. Thank you again, Doug. I very much appreciate this. I'm sure we're going to hear different opinions. Thank you for going on the record with all your wrestling opinions. And I'm sure I'll bring you back to continue to talk about more pro wrestling.
Sure, man. Sounds good.
Next up is the man who went to see NXT TakeOver New York, G1 Supercard at Madison Square Garden, and WrestleMania 35, Jeff Bond. Enjoy. I'm Joel Johnson, and today I am joined by the man that saw NXT New York, the G1 Supercard in Madison Square Garden, and WrestleMania 35, which is the last WrestleMania to have fans in attendance as this is being recorded. We'll see what happens next year. Jeff Bond, how are you doing, Jeff?
Yeah, sorry about that. I'm doing all right.
Let's jump right in, Bond. How did you start getting into pro wrestling?
Okay, so the exact timeline, I'm not exactly sure, but it was when Bret Hart was champion. So the mid-90s is kind of when I'm guessing. And honestly, I don't think I would have got into it if he wasn't from Calgary. Like, I think that was a huge part for me, is like a Calgarian was the WWF champion. So I kind of watched it when it wasn't super popular at first because of Bret. Then, you know, the Attitude Era happened and I got really, really into it. And then kind of faded out. I would say around like 2003, I kind of got out of it and then got back into it for whatever reason around like 2012. I think it was because like people at college were into it. So like you and a bunch of other people. There was a bunch of people into it at college. So
it's crazy how like you can go in and out of wrestling, but then you find a cluster of wrestling fans and you're like, oh, well, I guess I should watch this. And then it just kind of goes from there, and it's like, oh, well, I guess I'm back in this. So what would you say is your first memory as a wrestling fan?
Okay, so it's probably not accurate, like, but the one that stands out at this point is the Iron Man match, right, with Shawn and Bret. I think I probably rented it on like VHS. I definitely didn't watch it live. But that's kind of like it's the most triumphant moment. And I know that match doesn't hold up now. I actually haven't watched it, but like apparently it doesn't hold up now. But that finish was so amazing, right? Especially as a kid, right? So that, you know, the babyface going over. I know they've done that finish in multiple Iron Man matches now in some capacity, and it's kind of like played out. But at the moment, it was very spectacular, right? Like everything from his entrance, like, yeah, I just thought it was a really great match.
So now it sounds like when you really got into it was the Attitude Era. What about the Attitude Era got you really into this? Like what made your brain go, this is something I need to watch weekly?
I think it was like a little bit before the Attitude Era. So kind of right before the screw job, right? So but that was like planted all the seeds for the Attitude Era. And it was like, I think the reason I got into it like really intensely at that point is it wasn't super clear like what was real and what was fake, especially as a kid, right? So it just felt like there were so many moments where it's like you knew that this was like a scripted product, or at least I did, you know, like everybody's telling me it's fake all the time, right? So especially as a kid. But it just felt like Shawn and Bret like genuinely hated each other. And it's just like, I don't know, that's kind of, I like wrestling when it feels a little bit real, right? When you kind of are pushing against the fourth wall a little bit, but you don't break it entirely, right? So you're still staying in character, but there's just some real genuine hatred for guys. I don't know. I miss that in real sports too. I miss rivalries in sports. That's the Attitude Era for me. Or like the before the Attitude Era, you know, like whatever, late 90s, early 2000s, that's when I think wrestling kind of peaked as a television product, right?
You mentioned it. What did you think when that screw job happened? Like, were you aware that it was happening? Like, when did you hear about it? What did you think, and how did it lead into your viewing of wrestling at that time?
The thing is, like, I was so young, right, that I didn't even really know what was going on. Like, I didn't know any of the dirt sheet stuff. I didn't know Brett was going to WCW. I just kind of expected him to be back. And, like, the aftermath of that was super spectacular as well. I didn't really know about the screw job until years later. I can't put an exact timeline on it, but probably, like, I don't know, probably pretty soon. You would probably, like, hear Dave Meltzer talk about it or something. Like, are you asking me, like, what I think about the screw job? Or
yeah, what do you think of the screw job? Like, at that time, you were fairly young. Now that many years have passed, right. What do you think of the screw job?
Well, I think Brett got screwed over, for sure. Like, I think that's undeniable. I think he kind of got screwed over for the right reasons. Like, it's very complicated for me. Like, I kind of, like, if it wasn't Sean, I think he would have dropped that belt. And I think that's kind of the long and the short of it, is this the guy that they chose to put the belt on that complicated everything. The other issue, I didn't watch. Okay. the other thing is, I guess I turned out to be more of a WWF fan than a Bret Hart fan, because I never watched WCW, like, ever. There was never a point where I watched that company. So all my wrestling history is from that era is like WWF and a little bit of ECW, and that's like never ever WCW. I hated that program. Like, I hated it so much, which speaks to the tribalism of young people, right? So, but
what was it? Was it just that it was not WWF? What about WCW did you not like?
The thing is, my taste in wrestling hasn't really changed since I was like 12. So when I looked at WCW, all I saw were like big guys that couldn't work and small guys that made wrestling look fake. So I didn't like the cruiserweights and I didn't like the NWO. So there wasn't really a lot there for me. So, and I really didn't like Goldberg. I have always hated Goldberg. Like, Goldberg and Hogan are in the same category for me. It's just like two big guys that have no business being in a wrestling ring.
What were your thoughts of Rock and Austin? Because that really was, with Brett leaving, then you really saw the rise of Stone Cold and eventually the rise of The Rock. What did you think watching these two? Brett's gone, and these two really kind of slot into that next spot.
Yeah, I don't know. I think those two guys are you had two generational talents at the same time and never again. Like, basically, I don't think anybody comes even close to those two guys in terms of like sports entertainment stuff. Like, we could talk about in ring, you know, and it's, you bring up different guys, but those two just like if one of those guys was in WCW, like as that character, I think WCW might have still existed, right? But for WWF to have both of them, like, I just, yeah, they won the war right away because they got two guys over that were just massive, right? Like, you would go to school, like, after a Raw came to Calgary, and, like, everybody's wearing the shirts and stuff, and it's just, yeah. And people are doing the Raw catchphrases, like, the teachers were doing the Raw catchphrases at school. Like, it was just so, so much bigger than what it is now. Like, it's, like, not even comparable to what it used to be. Personally, at the time, so not in hindsight, but at the time, like, I really gravitated towards Mick Foley, but... Like, I like that really tough, hard-edged style. But, like, as I've gotten older, and, like, whatever, you hear more about, like, concussions and head injuries and just, you know, all that sort of stuff. And it's like, now I'm not a huge fan of the hardcore stuff. I used to be. So, like, Mick Foley, that it was amazing back in the day. Like, he was my favorite wrestler.
I think it's with any sport, you start looking at the head trauma and you start going, there's definitely some... There's some issues there. Now, we come off, like you were saying, about really hot pro wrestling, everyone doing the catchphrases, and you mentioned in the intro that you started to fall out of wrestling. What led you to kind of falling out of wrestling?
The main reason is I felt like the matches just got too violent, which is kind of ironic because I feel like it's kind of the opposite right now, right? Like, they're not violent enough. But it just like Foley, for example, right? They would have street fights all the time, and every match would just be like this bloody street fight. And I never felt like the feuds like actually built to that match. They just wanted to sell that pay-per-view, right? So it's like, here's a Hell in the Cell match, a street fight, you know, like just these bloody, bloody brawls. And like, I love that stuff, but it was just too much of it. Like, it just felt like they just didn't have a star at that point. Like, all the guys were kind of like, Austin was out of it. The Rock was doing Hollywood, like less than what he's doing now, but he was kind of out of it. And I just felt like they never really had a big star anymore. That's still true. But it just like, yeah, it just felt like I kind of outgrew it, partly because the guys that I gravitated towards weren't doing it anymore, or they were doing it way less. And also just like, whatever, it was like way too violent.
Now, was there at any point, because you had mentioned 2003, and in 2005 was really the coronation for Cena and Batista. Was there at any point you tuned in and you saw either of those guys, and what were your thoughts if you did tune in to see them?
Okay, so again, I can't exactly remember the exact timeline, but I like went to a Raw when Evolution was there, for sure. So I saw all those guys, but I didn't like. I got out of that before they were main eventers. So it was like, I probably tuned out when you were first getting into it, is my guess. So I never saw Batista be anything other than a big car guy. So.
Now you mentioned, like, what did you think? Now fast forwarding the clock even further, you're in college. And there are people like me and other people within our class that was watching wrestling. When you tuned back in and started watching, what did you think when you first started going back to watch?
That was like super watered down. So we keep talking about like bloody matches and Hell in the Cell and stuff, but like a PG Hell in the Cell is the most pathetic thing ever. Like, it's just like, to this day, there hasn't been a good Hell in the Cell match in like a decade, maybe even longer. It's still how I feel about the WWE, is it's just so stripped down. Like, nothing exciting ever happens, and they don't have stars. Like, it's just like, but there was something, you know, I guess there's always something, right? So when I was first, so that was like, what, like 2012? So CM Punk was still around, and The Shield was doing their thing. There's always something in wrestling that has me tuning into it. Like, it's pretty hard to not find something to gravitate towards. So I guess at the time it was CM Punk and The Shield. I was a really big fan of The Shield. Honestly, like, legitimately, 100%, I thought Dean Ambrose was the best guy on The Shield from the beginning.
I think WWE's definitely missing him. So you get to this point, and now we get to the current product. We're in 2020. I know we're smack dab in the middle of a pandemic, but what do you think of the current product from WWE, AEW, New Japan? Because things have changed drastically in the wrestling landscape for the last 5 or so years. It's very different. Streaming has definitely made its indelible mark on professional wrestling, the rise of the indies, Ring of Honor. What's your take on this massive landscape of professional wrestling and what people are getting now?
So for the most part, I just watch the mainstream stuff. So like WWE and AEW is what I consider. Do like New Japan, but it's not Western enough. Like, I want those storylines and those characters, right? Like, it's like, I still like my sports entertainment when it's done correctly. But I do like New Japan. I just don't follow it. But like, you know, if you recommend a match, there's a good chance. There's about a 50-50 chance that I'll watch it. Like, I've watched my share of New Japan. I do enjoy it, but it's not Western enough for me. WWE, I watch their quote-unquote pay-per-views on the network every once in a while, but, like, I don't follow their products. Like, I'm on top of, like, who the champion is and all that sort of stuff, but I don't follow it week to week because I don't know. Like, I just think it's boring. It's just, nothing exciting ever happens. And I think part of that's COVID for sure. And part of that's, again, they just lack that big mega star. And that's why they keep going back to Lesnar, because I think there's a lot of people that feel the way I feel, right? Is there's just no big guy, but it's their own fault. They don't book guys to be exciting. Like, I look at Kevin Owens, like, how do you screw up Kevin Owens? And there's the list goes on and on and on of guys that were huge stars in NXT, and then once they got the bigger spotlight, they just didn't book them correctly. Like, Seth Rollins is damaged goods, right? Like, I can never take him seriously as, like, a mega guy anymore. Like, he's good. He's, like, a serviceable main eventer. But he just never, like, he doesn't feel like a mega star. And I just, I don't know how you fix that, honestly. But, because there's not enough guys to beat now. Like, you can't, like, you can beat The Undertaker, or at least you used to be able to beat The Undertaker. But now he's, like, so old. Like, he has no business being in the ring. So that nobody can get over by beating the old guys anymore. So it's just, I don't know.
What do you think of the state of NXT right now? We went to NXT TakeOver New York and had the 2 out of 3 falls, Gargano and Cole, which I personally really enjoyed. What do you think of where it is now, from that moment to where it is now?
So I don't follow it week to week, partly because of it's not on television. And I don't really care enough if it's not on television to seek it out like a day later or whatever it is on the network. But I watch the TakeOver events, and if there's a big match, I'll watch it, like the Iron Man match and all that sort of stuff. I probably like it more than you do, but I just don't like it. It doesn't feel, again, it doesn't feel exciting anymore. Like, my favorite era of NXT, actually, there's a bunch. There's a whole bunch of feuds, but Johnny Gargano and Ciampa, right? Whatever. You know what I'm talking about. Their feud, like, it lasted literally years. Like, it was amazing, right? And they didn't get that payoff at New York, which, unfortunately, like, that's the event we went to. But that main event was so good, right, with Adam Cole. But Adam Cole's cooled off, right? So it's like, they'll bring a guy up, they'll put him on top of the world, and they'll just cool him off. And I don't know. Again, I think part of it is there's no fans, right? So it's like, you know, his babyface turn is kind of like lukewarm, right? Because it's like, there's nobody to receive it. Like I said, I think I probably like it better than you do, but I just don't find it exciting anymore. And I feel like when you hurt the champions and you diminish, you know, the prestige of the championship itself, right? So
now shifting gears to their rivals, or I guess quote unquote rivals. I don't know if you'd actually call them their rivals, just based on how things have played out from October, is All Elite Wrestling. What do you think of what they've done so far? What do they bring to the table? What do you like? What do you not like?
I think AEW is a company of extreme highs and extreme lows, and they have more extreme lows than they have extreme highs. I really don't like the comedy matches. Like, Orange Cassidy is an absolute embarrassment to the industry. Marco Stunt is an embarrassment to the industry. So there's so many people that, and don't get me started on the women's division, because I don't like anybody in the women's division. I don't even like Britt Baker. Like, I think it's all garbage. And it's a bunch of people that don't have any business being in a professional wrestling ring, or at least not on national television. They look like indie wrestlers, and some of them don't even look like indie wrestlers. Some of them don't look like they could have graduated from wrestling school. And that's kind of AEW for you in terms of the bad part. But I'm a big fan, like Cody and Dustin in that match. What was it? Like, was that Double or Nothing?
Yeah, that was Double or Nothing.
Yeah, that was amazing, right? I thought the tag match, even though it was like, what was that tag match? When was that?
Bucks and Hangman? Oh,
the original one. Bucks and Hangman was a great match.
Bucks and Lucha Bros?
No. We had it right the first time. Kenny and Hangman and the Bucks. I think they had an amazing match. I forget when it was, though.
Revolution. That was just before everything closed down.
Yes, right. I just forgot when it was. So I thought that match was amazing. I thought Moxley and MJF was amazing, just, you know, a couple weeks ago or whatever it was. Yeah, I don't know. When they do it well, I think they do it fantastically. But it's just like, you know, so MJF, I think, is amazing. I think he's a little small, but you can get around that. Like, he's every single day, he looks bigger and bigger. So you can't do anything about his height, but you get that chest wider. Like, he's going to look like a star really, really quick here. But he has nobody to work with. Like, there's no top babyface. And I just think, like, Cody is close. But he's also, like, he's not going to grow with this company. Like, he's like 10 years older than all these young guys. So it's like, who do you have? It's like, you have like Jungle Boy and MJF. Like, who else? Who? Like, that's it. And I'm also not totally sold on Jungle Boy, because I just, the longer he works, and now I'm just going to sound like Jim Cornette, because this is literally what he says. The longer he works with people that can't work, the more he'll lose his potential to be a superstar. That's my personal opinion. Like, I think he's just getting bad habits, and he's doing all this lucha bullshit. So that's my take.
No, that is the point of this, is to let opinions fly and get your take on stuff. Who's the greatest of all time? Who's your favorite wrestler of all time?
Like, in retrospect, like who do I think is the top guy right now, or like
overall? Overall, in your whole viewing experience of pro wrestling, however many years that's been, who do you consider number one?
Okay, I'm just going to give you a little list, and then I'll tell you my number one. So Bret Hart is definitely on there. So just kind of like, growing up, it was like Bret and Shawn. I liked both of them. I thought both of them were amazing. As a teenager, it was mostly Mick Foley. Just because, again, I like that hardcore bloody stuff as a teenager. That's why that, you know, it's so popular, ECW, with, you know, teens at the time. And then, like, Chris Benoit, let's be honest. I've liked Chris Jericho for, like, 20 years until recently, anyway. But I think Shawn, definitely, like, the best of all time. Or put it this way, the best of my, you know, time watching wrestling, because I think there's lots of arguments like for like Ric Flair and stuff, because I think he was like ahead of his time, but I, you know, I'm way too young for that, right? So out of the guys I watched, it was definitely Shawn.
What was your favorite match? What's a match that you can go to and go, that is downright incredible?
Probably Bret. And you see, I didn't like have enough guys in my list. But yeah, probably Bret Hart and Stone Cold in the I Quit match. Actually, it was a submission match, but, you know, whatever. It was an I Quit match. I just thought that was, like, a perfect match. With the exception of them going in the crowd for, like, 20 minutes, or at least it felt that way, like, I think that match was, like, perfect.
It's definitely one of, I think it's always floated in that conversation of the greatest of all time for match-wise.
But you had, like, two guys change, you know, from heel to babyface, you know, and vice versa, flawlessly. Like, they didn't just do it. It's not like Bret just went out there and like suddenly was a heel. It like built throughout the match, right? He got more and more frustrated, and he started doing more and more heel stuff. And like Austin, you know, like after that match, he stuns the referee, right? He hits him with a bloody stunner, and he's just trying to help him up because he's so beat up and he can't walk. But he stepped in character. He kept in character, rather. And I just think, like, it's just perfect. Like, everything about it.
Now, as we wind down closer to the end here, any last thoughts, opinions, anything that we didn't talk about in wrestling that you'd want to talk about right now?
No, so I guess the only thing is, like, even though I'm, like, really critical about AEW, I think it's really great for the industry that it exists. I think it's a real shame that this COVID thing is happening, because I think AEW would be in an even better position if it wasn't happening. And I just think it's, like, it's adding to the competition. But NXT should just move away from Wednesday nights and get back to being NXT, because I think trying to chase those headlines is what has plagued, you know, SmackDown and Raw for years and years and years. Like, you need to do storylines, not just headlines, because headlines will give you a bump in the ratings, right? You know, here's Stone Cold, he stuns, you know, Shane McMahon or something. Like, that's going to, like, get a whole bunch of people watching something on YouTube, but they're not going to stick around. The people that are going to stick around are the people that are invested in the storylines. So that's what I want to see out of wrestling. And like I said, I think it's fantastic that AEW is doing as well as it is, even though I'm not a huge fan of the product, the principle of it, I think is, you know, I think it's great that it exists.
Yeah, if you've got nothing more to add, I got no more questions. Thank you for coming on. I'm sure we can come back, and there's always something to talk about pro wrestling.
Next, we have a slight change of pace as I pass the interview mic to Martin, the co-founder of We Talk Podcast, and he interviews me. Enjoy.
What is it that you saw, and what drew you into wrestling the first time?
So it was absolutely my father that kicked me into pro wrestling. And the first memory I have is Rock hosting Austin's funeral. I believe they're feuding over the IC title. I just remember Rock cutting all these funny little promos on Austin and them fighting. I think I remember seeing a highlight of Austin getting thrown into the water and Rock having the funeral and then Austin coming out and then just the subsequent feud after that. That is the first thing I remember about professional wrestling was those two. And then from then on, it was just following those two as they got to their feud that they had continuously, and just absolutely my first two biggest memories of pro wrestling. Like that was where my mind was WWF, and it was Rock and Austin. And I remember watching, 'cause didn't have the funds to afford the pay-per-views, but I remember watching the build up to 17 and just being super hyped for that. And then getting ready for, and then being devastated by the Austin heel turn. Austin heel turns have hurt me when I was little a few times.
You know, it's interesting to hear, because, you know, you go Austin Rock, they were feuding, you know, and it's like, man, you were very lucky, because try and watch that, you know, and I don't care what age you are, who you are, try and watch that and not be entertained with those two, you know, leading the way.
They were just so incredibly talented, and you could see it. And like, I think my dad got me a Hawaiian shirt to match what The Rock was wearing at one point, because it was just, I was so enamored by those two. And it's just like, oh God, this is so amazing. And I remember one of the other memories is like that sticks out is unfortunately Owen's passing, and that's when everything kind of got a little bit more smart to wrestling, because my dad would always go on a site called Raja, and then so by proxy he would go on it and get information, and that's partially how we learned about what happened with Owen, and then just delve deeper into the dirt sheets. And I think I was only in kindergarten when I started reading dirt sheets, so it was basically from then on, it was just, you had an idea what was happening, but there were so many entertaining characters that you're like, ah, doesn't matter that it's fake, I still want to enjoy these characters, especially ones like Rock and Austin.
Yeah, pretty much every one of your favorite television shows was probably fake, so I mean, you know, and just look at it that way. Your father, was he a long-term fan at that point, or had he recently come on, and is he still a fan?
He's not a fan. He is definitely, he'll watch little stuff with me here and there. Like, we'll throw on little things here and there that he'll want to watch. Like right now we're slowly plodding through The Last Ride, the documentary on The Undertaker. But he was a wrestling fan up until the Attitude Era. And I think the Attitude Era actually kind of turned him off, especially when Rock and Austin left. It definitely led to him having less of an interest. But he was a lifelong fan. He remembers watching stuff with Brett and Stampede Wrestling and aunts and uncles that were friends with people that were in the Stampede Wrestling, and that's how he kind of got going. And then he would float in and out, and he would watch a little bit of stuff with me here and there, but really once Rock and Austin left, that was kind of his checkout point. He would watch stuff periodically, and he'd enjoy different matches, but it was definitely I'm definitely carrying on the torch.
At what point did it kind of switch from you from being something that you were enjoying to being the obsession that it is now?
Oh, it was basically like obsessed with it from basically the first and only pay-per-view my parents ordered was Saint Valentine's Day Massacre.
Oh,
with
nice
Vince McMahon versus Rock. And I had my one of my cousins and one of my uncles come over to watch with us, and we're watching and we're playing around with the wrestling stuff and the figures. I had a Kane and I had a Austin plastic figure, and I just it basically was that from that point on I was obsessed until I just stopped watching. I just completely stopped watching for I think about a year. There were things that happened after the invasion angle that I just have no memory of ever seeing until I discovered SmackDown one day, and I was like, well, I'm back in again. But I took a random year off. I'm not sure why I stopped watching, but I just remember not watching at all.
You know, you talk about it, it's a lot of angles, and it's a lot of promos and that type of thing that you're kind of bringing up that kind of brought you in. Is there a match where you went, oh, this is what professional wrestling is?
I don't think that came until later. I think it was really the emergence of Benoit. It was the emergence of Benoit and some of the matches that he had heading into his world title, because I didn't really watch a lot of SmackDown. So I never got to see the SmackDown 6. I never got to see Kurt Angle. I never got to see them firing at all cylinders. But I think once Benoit started going and you'd watch like him and Sean and that whole build in 04, I think that's when I really started gravitating more towards in-ring workers. And then I really liked Jericho. I liked Benoit a lot. I liked Eddie. And once you kind of got smart, once you saw SmackDown and you'd see guys like Ray and you'd see guys like Eddie, it was like, oh man, these guys are just really good. And I despised Hunter. I thought he was boring, and I thought Evolution was terrible, and I hated every second of it until, of course, Randy and Batista turned on him, and then I was like, yay, Randy and Batista. I really liked Batista a lot. I think it was around WrestleMania 20 with Benoit, and then really solidified with Kurt versus Shawn, because that was built for that, was these two incredible wrestlers going at each other. And I was like, ah, this is really exciting.
So what was the first WrestleMania you saw broadcast live then? And where did you see it?
My first WrestleMania that I saw live was WrestleMania 23. I saw Batista and Taker, which I really loved that match. I really liked MVP and Benoit that year. I liked Cena and Michaels, and I knew something was weird with the end. It felt very weird how it ended, and then of course you go on the dirt sheets and you hear Shawn wasn't thrilled with Cena, and just that was my first WrestleMania.
It's interesting, actually. Do you think that that you would be the wrestling fan you are now without the dirt sheets? It sounds like they're almost as important to your personal journey as the matches and everything else.
I think they play a very big role, because I think, especially around that time, because that's when, like, I distinctly remember hearing the stories about them wanting to do the self-destruction of Bret Hart, and then, of course, leading me into a journey of discovering Bret Hart and reading up and learning way more about the Harts and what he meant for pro wrestling. But I really think the dirt sheets played a role, because sometimes they're way more entertaining than what the wrestling's put on screen. And there are certain Raws that I remember going, that was okay. But just the stories behind the scenes and how things are being put together, the rumors and the fantasy booking of things coming together. I had a little notebook as a kid where I would book my own wrestling territory of all the action figures that I had, and then just fantasy booking wrestling stuff and playing the video games. It really... the dirt sheets really played into my imagination of just what was happening behind the scenes, and then watching what was playing out. It kind of went hand in hand.
Did you get kind of drawn in by one particular dirt sheet, or is there a particular site that really made an influence on you?
It was Raja. And then now as an adult, it's definitely Meltzer. Meltzer's kind of the main go-to, and Sean Ross Sapp, Fightful.com. But it was Raja, because Raja was this amalgamation of everything. And I would just, like, I remember when everything happened with Benoit. I never did it. I always made a rule, an odd little rule at school, of never checking dirt sheets when I was at school, because I didn't want to use the school computer to check the dirt sheets. But I remember when everything happened. I was just wrapping up junior high, and I just remember refreshing that page constantly. And that was the first time that I was ever, like, had used Raja at home. And I still have Raja on my phone. I still will occasionally pop that up and see if there's any big headlines on there. But that was the main one that I always went to.
It's actually amazing to me, because I've never heard of Raja.
That's crazy, because Josh actually brought it up in his interview. And he used it religiously too. So I think this, I'll have to send you it.
Yeah, definitely. Something I have to check out if it had that kind of influence on you. So what is your favorite angle of all time? And some other angles that you think of are, among the best that you've seen.
I'm trying to think here. I love the beer truck. I remember seeing that. Milkomania still stands out to me. Just Kurt coming out and hosing everyone down in the invasion angle. Current angles. I'm trying to think. Like the Ciampa turn on Johnny. We'd all kind of heard that was coming, and we were all speculating when that turn was going to happen. And the two of them teased it on Twitter a couple times, just for LOLs and just having fun with things. And then when it finally happened, and the brutality of it, as like, this is incredible, I loved every second of it. Jericho popping up in New Japan, which seemed so incredibly foreign to me, and just never thought Jericho would wrestle anywhere else, because like by the time social media hit and you had Twitter and he had his podcast, you're listening, and he's like, I won't work for anyone else outside of Vince. And you would always hear stories, and I read all of Jericho's book, and it just seemed incredibly crazy that he was in Japan, and he was challenging Omega. And I think I'd heard some rumblings of it maybe happening, and I just stumbled across a clip on Twitter, I think, when it happened, and I watched this clip, jaw hit the floor. I was like, oh my God, I can't believe this happened. What's going on? Like, this is insane to me. And I mean, the other angle that has really stood out more recently was Kenta's turn, because I was watching that G1 final night, not live, but I was watching it, and I'm going through, and I see Kenta just attack Ishii. I'm like, wait, what's going on here? And then you watch and you follow along, and then Shibata comes running out, and you're like, and he starts attacking Kenta, and I'm like, he's not supposed to do that. What's going on? Are they building? Oh, this is insane. The crowd's going wild. So it's really those type of angles. Batista's thumbs down to Hunter. I always remember that, because that tied into Randy. Randy, what happened to Randy? It just, there's a ton of wrestling angles I remember that definitely left an impression.
It actually is surprising to me that what I think is one of the best angles of the 21st century, and I would have thought it would have been right there in that era where, and maybe it's the era where you stopped watching, but the Nexus attack on Raw.
Oh, I was very loose. Cena definitely, around that time, Cena definitely had me a lot more loose with things, but I remember the Nexus angle. I remember it being a bigger deal because I really like Daniel Bryan. And the bigger part of that I think overshadows it for me was him getting fired. And then him returning at that SummerSlam. Him getting fired was bigger than that whole beatdown, because I was like, what are you doing? How could you let him go? He's such an... You've made such a terrible mistake.
It's the Dapper Yapper Justin Roberts' fault. That's what I say.
Because I remember being so hyped for him, but being scared, because I was like, I don't know what they're going to do with him. I remember finding ways of watching ECW when Punk debuted. Like, that Punk debuting was big, because that's the first time I ever saw him. And that, of course, led me down YouTube watching old Punk matches. And I was so scared that he was going to end up in this kind of limbo, quasi have the title for a little bit, but not really. I was really nervous for Brian, and I think that overshadowed it for me for the Nexus angle.
So what was your first kind of forays outside of WWE then? I mean, you were, when you first became a fan, and I mean, you were there when WCW obviously would have shut down then. I'm sure that made an impact on you. And then you, outside of WCW, though, what were you watching? Did you watch much WCW, actually?
No, I remember when Brett was over, I remember little snippets of WCW being on in the house, but I never got to see any of WCW live. And it wasn't until I purchased it that I saw the dual screen. And I remember being, as a kid, shocked that Shane McMahon's name was on the contract and he now owns WCW, and going, oh my God, what does this mean? What's happening? And of course, running to the dirt sheets and trying to figure out what's happening, and just still being mind blown by it, because you're still reading the dirt sheets, but you're at the mind of an 8-9-year-old, so you're still it doesn't take much to shock the brain. And so, but I was a WWE loyalist. I was so, this is the brand I'm sticking with. I rode through some really odd, rough times when I was watching, and it wasn't until Punk, Brian, that I started viewing some Ring of Honor stuff on YouTube. YouTube definitely helped facilitate my watching habits of other things, and I always remember watching little snippets of TNA, but always being like, I can't watch the full thing because I gotta watch WWE. That is where I have to remain loyal. But I remember seeing stuff with AJ and Kurt and Samoa Joe, being like, okay, yeah, these are okay, but I still prefer WWE more. And then just the product got really weak around 2008, 2009, and it wasn't until Punk's pipe bomb that fully hooked me. That was one of the most shocking moments as a wrestling fan. I have never spent, it was the second time since the Benoit incident that I was refreshing dirt sheets regularly, because I'm trying to figure out what's going on, because obviously if this was a legit shoot, it wouldn't have happened. And I knew that the Raw was being pre-taped shortly after that, because they, for whatever reason, they were doing back-to-back tapings that night. And I remember refreshing and trying to find results, and Cena wanted to face Punk. So I knew that it was a storyline, but I was hooked into that. And then when Punk started talking about New Japan Pro Wrestling, Ring of Honor, and I was like, oh, there is more out there. And then it just grew more and more where time went, where you'd hear stories about other guys through these dirt sheets and you'd want to watch and see. It started with Punk and Brian, and then it really kicked into gear about 2014, 2015. And then New Japan, once I discovered New Japan and had New Japan World, then I'm off and running.
Was there a match outside WWE then? Because it wouldn't have been probably an angle. It wouldn't have been a promo, most definitely. It would have been a match that somewhere made you go, oh, God, I can't not pay attention to what's going on, or only to WWE anymore. I have to pay attention to this other stuff, too.
Well, I think what it was for me was you'd hear the stories of, like, Chris Hero, Nigel McGuinness. Like, I didn't see full matches of them, and it wasn't my watching, my full-blown getting fully into these other products and these other brands really kicked off with Wrestle Kingdom 9. Watching that off a torrent, because it was we were splitting it with I was splitting watching it with Josh, and it was Shinsuke Nakamura, Kota Ibushi, and then Tanahashi and Okada. And
that's knowing the one that JR called that one.
Yep, it was English commentary, which was super exciting at that time. And then I just was like, this is incredible. Like, I have to get more into this. I have to watch more of this. And once I finally got a New Japan World subscription when Naito had the title and Evil debuted and took the title off Okada, And then I think the next show I watched was Okada getting the title back. And then from then on, it was gotta watch New Japan. And Ring of Honor was becoming more available to me, and Bullet Club was very entertaining. And I've talked about this with Josh. I remember that Wrestle Kingdom 9 and seeing this, the guy that I think he was challenging for the IWGP Junior Heavyweight title, going, man, that guy in shades and the gray hair and sweeping the broom is really cool. I really like him. I wonder what he'll end up being. And then
he's Kenny Omega.
Yeah.
I probably was pushing you also into getting into that Japan stuff and everything. So you're welcome.
Yep. Yeah, because I remember I think it was just after I got into We Talk Podcast and got everything onto this site and talking with you, and you were like, oh, you gotta check out New Japan. You gotta check out New Japan. And it's like, all right, I'm gonna check out New Japan. And then rest was history. Thank God I watched that, because that has been my say. I don't know if I'd still be as hardcore of a wrestling fan if it wasn't for New Japan, Ring of Honor, Bullet Club, Kenny and the Bucks.
Did the Benoit thing then, you say you were refreshing the page constantly during that period, did it almost kill your love for the business?
It was so weird when that happened. Because that was such a big thing, and I remember it being on Nancy Grace, and everyone being like, this pro wrestling is terrible. But I remember Brett coming to its defense, and I'd read Brett's book, I think the year prior, and like there's more, like the Bret Hart DVD came out. So that definitely helped kind of shield having the Bret Hart side of things. I think it may have been the year after, though, with Brett. I'm trying to remember when his book came out in correlation. Remove stuff from the book that was Benoit's story, but that was definitely massive, just because I was still kind of watching, because there was still stuff there that I enjoyed for WWE, but it definitely took a while to kind of find my footing again as a wrestling fan. That was very, very massive, because Benoit was one of my guys, because My appreciation and love for Brett didn't come until that DVD came out. When WWE released that DVD and I could watch all his matches, that's when the appreciation for Brett skyrocketed to incredible heights, and then kind of leveled out a bit. But Benoit was the other guy. And that the funny thing is, the reason Benoit became one of my guys, I hadn't seen a lot of them, but I was playing a wrestling game, and for whatever reason, I couldn't hit a finisher in the ring. I couldn't press the buttons properly, and it was frustrating me, but I could always do top rope finishers. And so I had it down between Eddie and Benoit, and I liked the diving headbutt more in the game, so I was like, I'm going to use Benoit. In the video game, I won the title, and I went undefeated for a long time. It was great. And then watching him in ring, I was like, oh, this guy's really, really good. And it just kind of grew from there. And hearing him train with the Hearts and all the stories that WWE would put out just tied it all in. And it was very bad. But I think having Brett being one of the anchors kind of helped keep me even keel, where when everything happened, I was like, I still have Brett. I still have Jericho. I can muddle my way through.
So, I mean, given this, you know, kind of gotten, I think, a pretty good idea of your history here, but we want to end on a fun note, and we already asked about, you know, favorite angles. So that leaves two things. That leaves favorite promos, favorite matches, and, of course, you can't mention the pipe bomb again.
Oh, okay. No pipe bomb. I think promos... You know what? It was a series of promos. They all kind of tied together because they kind of told a fluid story. I think my favorite promos, if I can't use the pipe bomb, is actually The Rock and Hurricane interacting. I really love those. Those always are a shining memory in my mind. it was one of the things I loved about Rocky was his comedic timing and just the comedy that he would bring at different points, the levity that he would bring, and then just being able to talk circles around people. And I think couple that with just willing to give the Hurricane a win. And I like the Hurricane because I like superheroes. So I was like, oh, yay, Hurricane. And then when he got the win over Rock, it was big because I was like, oh, this is crazy. And all those promos that were cut beforehand, this is wild. And then as an adult, as current version that I am now, which you could call an adult if you wanted to, I just saw how giving Rock was in that. And reading stories about Rock making all those pre-tapes going live to give Hurricane more. And he was just, he was a star at that point, but he gave this guy so much. And he gave him a pinfall win on Monday Night Raw, which I thought was a big deal. So it kind of all encompasses back with that promo where that specific moment and just the memories of the Rock promos always stand out to me. And then, what were the other two? Match and favorite wrestler? You already,
yeah, well, I don't think I asked favorite wrestler, but we'll do that. Let's do matches first.
Matches? Ah, oh, man, there's so many. I always really loved Kurt versus Taker when I saw it on the network. Because I remember looking up Kurt Angle matches, and that was one of the ones on the list. I'm like, why is this on the list? Okay, well, I'll go watch this. This is just before Kurt left, and I loved it. I loved the finish. I loved how everything ended afterwards. It was just such a great, well-done angle and just match. Well, not angle, but match, and just everything that led into eventually Ray getting the title and just showing how damn good Kurt Angle was at the time and how good Taker was. 25 Taker and Shawn I've watched on repeat. I just want to say all Bret Hart matches. Owen, Bulldog, his match against Benoit, tribute to Owen. Like, just Bret was... That's
a brilliant match.
He just was... There's no one... Well, there are people that have shades of Bret in them. I think Tanahashi does. But Bret, just the way he threw punches and the way he moved and the way moves were done and his selling, it just all felt so constantly crisp. It didn't feel fake. It didn't feel like they were waiting for something. It just felt like he was always he's a step above everyone else. And the caring Bulldog, his feud with Owen, like he just, I've watched so many Bret Hart matches, like Mr. Perfect, SummerSlam, and then King of the Ring, even the Bam Bam Bigelow match. Like he just, he delivered on just such a high level. I mean, I think we're very fortunate that we got to see Okada's run with the IWGP Heavyweight title with the 12 title defenses, and then facing Omega. I think that is an incredible run, and you watch it. You watch from his first match with his first defense, which was what's his name? Marjafuni, I think.
Oh, Marafuji.
And he does Emerald what's it called? Emerald Fluision? The move that Misawa did in transition to Rainmaker. That was incredible. The Shibata match, even though with how it ended, is always going to be a little bit of a mark against it. But that was an incredible match. His run against Tana, and I don't think I've seen.
Oh man, he had that great match against Tiger Mask. Not Tiger Mask, the normal Tiger Mask. But that was Ibushi under the mask.
Yeah.
Yeah, he had the great match with Suzuki. You know, I mean, it was phenomenal.
And I mean, you mentioned it, but I don't think I've seen a better wrestling match than Kenny and Okada. It's hard to pick which one I like more because I like their G1 match as well. Mm-hmm. Like, I think their G1 match just because it's different. And that's the first time Kenny got to pin Okada. And it's like, you just think, okay, he's close. What else does he need? And obviously, I didn't mention in the angles, but you go back to the reuniting of the Golden Lovers, and you go through that whole story, and just that moment with Ibushi and Kenny, and they'd done such a great job teasing it up to that point. And I mean, I still, it's ingrained in my, it's one of the calls that are ingrained in my head. There are a few calls that are ingrained, but Kenny, Callis calling when he's hit the one-winged angel, he's yelling, hook the leg, and he's almost losing his voice as they count the three, and you finally see Omega slay Okada. It just, it was picture perfect. I mean, Naito and Omega have had incredible matches, especially around the G1 time. Just, I mean, you can't, there's so many incredible wrestling matches. It's, I mean, you mentioned it in your interview, but that tag team match with the Bucks and Kenny and Hangman and the storytelling and just the end little tease there, just masterful storytelling. And it just, I mean, one of the other matches that aren't like any of those, but Rock and Austin at 17, regardless of the heel turn, that still was probably one of the biggest, if not maybe one of the biggest WWE matches of all time, just because that absolutely. Was their two biggest stars, and like the promo package and like I watched that hype package for that match so many times as a kid, and I'll still throw it on occasionally as an adult, just because it in a lot of ways it may have been the pinnacle for WWE, and it's been a slow decline since then.
It's widely considered the best WrestleMania of all time. So, I mean, it's, you know, that event, you know, the ladder match with the tag titles, and also, you know, Hunter versus Triple or versus Undertaker, and just so many great matches like that. That whole card was just amazing. So, absolutely. So, where do you think, or what do you think is the biggest change? Do you think are the most significant thing that's happened in the industry during the first 200 episodes? And what do you think is the biggest change we might see in the next 200?
So the 200, the first episode we started was 2016. And I think the biggest change I've seen is the emergence of New Japan, the rise of Ring of Honor by proxy, Bullet Club with Kenny, the Bucks. I ordered Ring of Honor pay-per-views because of them. I wanted to see certain finishes. I wanted to see certain things. I wanted to see certain matches, and they were one of the reasons why I would order those pay-per-views. Like, it just, Adam Cole, you've seen the rise and decline of NXT within this podcast. Like, if you go back earlier, there are podcasts where me and Josh are just singing the praises of NXT and just enamored by what they were doing. Like, I remember watching live the Nakamura match. I've been to two takeovers live, and it's just been incredible to see. And you're really seeing the shift in the business of other things rising up and surpassing WWE, to me, in the level of entertainment and value that I'm getting, which 7-6-year-old me would not comprehend, because, well, nothing's better than WWE. In actual fact, there are stuff that absolutely is better than WWE, and I think that's one of the big things with the 200th episode. And the rise of AEW is something you called, but when that happened, you're just seeing that competition. And I think part and partial why there's competition growing is because of streaming, because of the internet, because you can have gifs of a GCW pay-per-view and go, what is this? What is Bloodsport? What's happening? How do I watch this? Because this looks amazing. And just seeing the rise of that and the decline of WWE. When we've been seeing the decline for WWE for years, it's really being solidified right now. For, it's just, I watched Hell in a Cell yesterday on a replay, and I was like, meh, it was all right. The women's was good. But the reality is, a bunch of these guys and girls might not be here in 3 years, and you have no one waiting in the chamber. There's nothing like when Rock and Austin were there, and then you saw the emergence of Brock, Randy, and Cena, and Batista, they don't really have that next in the chamber ready to fire off at a moment's notice. They do have a few guys, but, I mean, with the speaking out, I don't know how much value these guys will have, but that doesn't matter. And in the next 200 episodes, I think you're going to see WWE become... I just don't know how WWE rebounds. I really don't. I think the next 200 episodes are going to really be just the slow rot and decay of WWE, and hopefully the rise of other wrestling companies. And I think New Japan's in a great spot right now, and I think they're going to continue to move forward. I think AEW is in a good spot, and hopefully they can continue to grow. And if they can start to get into more households, it hurts that they have NXT, because I think if they didn't have NXT going next to them, I think the ratings would be higher, and I think TNT would be looking to do more stuff with them. I still think they should, because I think you could easily start to grow the brand more so, and you've seen that they're doing more with them. I think as technology grows, and especially with streaming, you're going to see in the next 200 episodes, you're going to see more options and less people watching WWE, because they just haven't been able to do anything. And I mean, the tribal chief with Roman is great, and I think it's an amazing shift for him, and it's finally seeing the value of Roman Reigns. But I could see Roman wanting to move on to something else, like acting. So how much longer do you have Roman Reigns, and who do you have ready to take his spot? I mean, it's pro wrestling. There'll always be someone there that we don't see that will suddenly emerge. But it's WWE, and they've mishandled so much. I think next 200 episodes are going to be more the same of, yeah, WWE, record profits, but the product itself is slowly declining, so... Yeah, that's my take.
That's your take on the next 200 episodes. All right, well, it'll be interesting to see 200 episodes from now when you're doing number 400, you know, exactly what where the business is and where WWE is. I've enjoyed this. I hope I've done an adequate job, you know, as a moderator, I guess you would call me, or whatever, the interviewer. But, yeah, it's really interesting to hear your journey.
No, this has been a great journey, like just talking to everyone. So I'm excited to put this all together and putting this all out for the listeners out there. And I'm looking forward to 200 more. And you did a fantastic job. Here we are with another interview as we march on with the 200th episode for the One Fall podcast. I am joined by the co-founder of We Talk podcast. He is, I can't run through all his nicknames, but he's won two G1s. He is the futurist. He's the crown prince of charisma. It is Martin. There we go. Oh,
yeah, you did pretty well there. Got the name pretty good. Martin. I like crown prince of charisma still, but let's face it, futurist, I still earned it.
You definitely, I think you've called the last three G1 winners, have you not?
I have called three straight G1 winners, yes. And, hey, let's, if we're going to go into history, I mean, it's way more than that, though. I mean, hey, I called AEW a year before it happened.
That is true. Oh, yeah, that's right. You talked about Cody and you were saying you thought it was going to go this direction. It's like, we'll see. And then
it did. Yeah. So yes, I've earned that little nickname that I've given myself. Of course, you should never gloss yourself your own nicknames, but I have.
Thank you for coming on. Thank you for hosting the podcast. Thank you for getting us to 200. You have been a great contributor to the show, as has Josh and everyone else that I have interviewed. I guess I always start with my first question. How did you start watching professional wrestling? How did you get sucked into this world?
What's my earliest memories? Well, I'm older than you, which is probably why I'm the one hosting the podcast and the website. By the way, congratulations on 200. I just have to say that. I don't know if you realize what a great accomplishment that is. You know, it's really cool that you've made it that many episodes. That's not a lot of podcasts make it very far. So 200 episodes is really cool. for me, how did I get into it? Well, I was lucky enough to come in kind of towards the last iteration or two of Stampede Wrestling. And my very earliest memory, we used to have a friend of my parents, and they would go visit this couple every – we would usually go every week and go visit them. And one day we went to go visit them, and it was a Saturday afternoon, and we always used to sit there and watch TV and play in the one room. And their dad came and kicked us out because he had to watch wrestling. He had to watch Stampede Wrestling. And I remember it just made a huge impression on me, actually, that he would kick us out of the room where we were all playing, and he would stop hanging out with his friends for an hour to watch this show. Because there was lots of friends that were over, but this was more important. He couldn't miss it. And even though I didn't actually watch it, that made a huge impression on me on the power of professional wrestling, because I already knew about it. I mean, Stampede was, we come from a different, even the city of Calgary, you have to understand, back then was very different. I mean, you would have grown up as far more of a metropolis feel, cosmopolitan, is probably the better word, cosmopolitan feel in Calgary. And when I was growing up, it really was much more of that small town, it was still fairly big, but, much more of a small town, western redneck feel, quite frankly. And Stampede Wrestling captured that, and captured a large portion of the city's imagination. And what drew me in first would be the characters, not the wrestling. I was there when it was kind of a rebound. The company, I don't know, have you read Pride and Passion by Heath McCoy, the excellent novel on the history of Stampede Wrestling? Well, I could not give it a higher recommendation to you and everybody else. It's a spectacular book. And I'm sure widely available at libraries and all over the place. And absolutely, Pride and Passion is a great book, but it's a cyclical business. And there's periods where Stampede Wrestling was hot and periods where it was down. And when I came in, it would have been hot because they had the Hart brothers were all there. And the idea that these were the sons of the promoter and fighting for the honor of the territory, much like you've heard about with the Von Erichs, the Harts really helped to bring the territory up. But it was more the heel characters that grabbed me, especially J.R. Foley, who was the heel manager, the lead heel manager in the territory. And he looked like Adolf Hitler and was British and legitimately a real-life shooter, though you wouldn't know it to look at him. And he, I just remember he ran for mayor at one point and got like 78 votes or something like that, and it was hilarious. And like he was just such a character. And then he had this wild, crazy ensemble, including the Dynamite Kid in his heel stable. And so it was really him and that heel stable. That's my earliest memories, and they drew me in. That's what got me watching, was wanting to see them, and largely wanting to see the interactions between J.R. Foley and Ed Whalen. I almost said Ed McMahon. Ed Whalen and J.R. Foley, they had this great chemistry where they go back and forth in their interviews. That was just awesome for a young me.
Now, we've got that all going, and that, like, you bring up those names and instantly you recognize them from Brett's book. When was the first time you saw the global phenomenon known as the WWF?
Well, what happened was that Stampede Wrestling was purchased by the territory, rights to the territory, as he had done with every other territory, was purchased by Vince McMahon Jr. And he had purchased Calgary, a deal that he never fully paid out on, as usual. And that Stu Hart never made any. It was basically, the rule was, okay, you can have my territory. You're going to pay me this amount of money every year to run shows in this territory. I will shut down, but you must employ my kids and my son-in-law, so you must employ Brett, you must employ Davey Boy Smith and Dynamite Kid and Jim Neidhart. You must take them and give them employment. And that was the deal. And so even after he reneged on the deal, what you had was, you had Stu not wanting to mess with their careers. So he didn't really do anything about it. But for a short period, it was shut down. Because he reneged on the deal, it got opened back up again with Bruce Hart running it. Stu was still there, but it was Bruce Hart was really the in control in this comeback, and that's where you had Brian Pillman and Owen Hart, and that was the final generation, really. Chris Benoit, Ben Bassarab, along with Muck and Singh and a few other guys, right? So you had that generation. So in between that, you had this period where Dynamite Kid and Davey Boy Smith, they weren't known as the British Bulldogs, but they were a tag team, and they were baby faces together now near the end of the first territory run. And I remember WWF coming on one day, going to go watch Stampede Wrestling, and this other thing came on. And I had watched, I had attempted to watch All-Star Wrestling, which comes out of Vancouver, and was just terrible. It was like a poor man's version. And I know some people must have grown up on it and loved it, but really, really just an inferior version of Stampede Wrestling to me. Just everything about it was inferior. And Stampede Wrestling was really an excellent territory when it was on fire. And, you know, there would always be flaws, but it was an excellent territory in many ways. And reason why its tapes were traded all across the world. So during this period, I remember one, you know, coming on one day and seeing this other thing come on TV and just immediately shutting it off and thinking, where's my Stampede Wrestling? Coming back the next week, hoping it would be back on. It wasn't. Trying a few more times. It was never on. And so I didn't watch this new thing, this World Wrestling Federation that came on the television. It was unfortunately I wasn't even looking at the production values of I was just disappointed Stampede Wrestling was gone. And know that the other wrestling that I had attempted to watch at that point was really not very good out of BC in the All-Star Wrestling. So one day, a friend of mine that I used to walk home to school with, and I never really saw much of him, but his name was Greg, except for we would walk back and forth to school. That was like the extent of our friendship. But one day he would always tell me about, he had a lot more channels on TV than me. And we were just kind of like basic channels. And he had all these things. So he would tell me things about like Terminator. It's great. You got to see it. He rips out a guy's heart, you know, things like that. Well, one day, you know, he's talking about the wrestling and he's talking about WWF and he keeps on, you know, talking about it. And he mentioned something about the British Bulldogs and it clicked to me. I remember thinking, could that be Dynamite Kid and Davey Boy Smith and whatever, you know, went on for a couple more days or whatever. And eventually I said, you know, he's like, I really like Dynamite Kid. And I said, I really like Dynamite Kid and Davey Boy Smith. And he goes, well, that is the British Bulldogs, you know? And I'm like, of course I know, you know, I had no idea. You know, I was a kid, right? So that made me watch. And the very first episode of wrestling, Maple Leaf Wrestling, that they used to show, which was our syndicated version in Canada of the weekly show, it was had a match, and I believe this is the only match on Maple Leaf Wrestling that Hulk Hogan ever had, and I happened to catch it. And of course, I was told about everybody in there. Of course, Greg mentioned Hulk Hogan, you know, so I knew the name, and they said Hulk Hogan was going to. I see this guy get introduced. His name was Tiger Chung Lee. I think he was known as Kim Duke in other territories, but he was Tiger Chung Lee in WWF, and he was huge. He was like 6'4", 270 pounds. He just looked like a badass, and you could tell in a territory like Stampede Wrestling, he may not win the championship, but he'd be a contender. So he looked like a real, real tough guy. And then he wrestled Hulk Hogan, and Hulk Hogan beat him, and the match is available on YouTube, and beat him in about 4 minutes, and I was like, that was it. I was enthralled. Like, first time I saw Hulk Hogan, and I saw him in this match, and the fact that I got that lucky to actually see a match, and I saw the crowd reaction and his charisma and just his look and then how dominant he was over this guy that I thought was a badass. I was it. I was hooked. And I never really missed. And that would be, you know, I'd be pulling what my dad's friend did. You know, we'd be every Saturday afternoon, I'd be sitting there playing basketball in the back alley. We'd be playing for hours. But when time came to watch wrestling, I'd go and everybody'd be pissed off at me and I'd come back when it was over. But that was it. I was not missing it. That really drew me in.
The neat thing.
Sorry if such long answers.
Ah, I'm enjoying listening. The one thing that I'm enjoying with this is everyone that I've talked to up to you has been the Attitude Era, has been their launching pad, or just before the Attitude Era. It's somewhere around there. So you're really going back. So I guess my next question
I'm really old
is
what you're saying. I get you. No, but it was Stampede Wrestling, but only for about a year, and then Rock and Wrestling. And then for a short period of time, for a couple of years, Stampede and the Rock and Wrestling Era were on at the same time on Saturday afternoons when it came back. Yeah, so it's a different... like I say, everything was different back then. Both the wrestling and how sophisticated people were was very different, right?
Yeah.
In the city, but also in how smart the fans were, and it was a lot easier to suspend your belief than it ever was, even during the Attitude Era.
Now, kind of moving forward, you roll into the 90s with the Attitude Era, which is the launching pad for a lot of the people that we've interviewed. I guess my question to you is, when you're going from the rock and roll wrestling to the early 90s, which was a struggle, but you also had WCW, were you able to watch WCW at all? Were you watching any other wrestling, or were you just watching WWF at that time?
So in 1987, I'd seen WrestleMania 2. And I was watching Now regularly by the time it was on. And I saw WrestleMania 2 by renting the video for WrestleMania 2. I remember renting it. I think it was for a birthday party or something like that. It was a whole bunch, me and a whole bunch of other kids. I remember watching it, and we were all just amazed by this. We were all so excited to watch this. You know, all our favorites were on this WrestleMania 2 tape, and we had rented it and from the video store, and we were watching this thing. And Bruno Sammartino maybe is the one who made the most impression to us in the Battle Royal. Everyone was like, this guy's awesome. We had no idea who he was. You know, we had never seen him. He wasn't a regular part of the rock and wrestling era. All of a sudden, this guy's in there kicking butt. We're like, this guy's great. Who is this? It's Bruno freaking Sammartino. I was there, and in between the Attitude Era and the rock and wrestling era was the New Generation. And the New Generation was Diesel and Razor Ramon, Shawn Michaels, and of course Bret Hart. And seeing Bret Hart, who I'd seen before he left for Stampede, you know, in his last little while in Stampede, him and Bad News Allen at the time, Bad News Brown and WWF, he have a major feud for the North American heavyweight title that included a ladder match. That was the first ladder match I ever saw. So to see him represent the city and get to be world champion, that's what kept me hooked on those off years, you know, was Bret Hart. And Bret Hart was a revelation to me and became my all-time favorite, and is to this day and always will be, because he represented the city and he was brilliant. And he kept me, if not for him, I'm not sure I would have continued watching. Because it wasn't a great product. It was the New Generation was not a great product, but it eventually turned around with the Attitude Era. So that's kind of what kept me going, though, is largely just seeing Bret Hart represent the city and being so proud of him. It meant a lot. I'm sorry, what was the question?
One of the questions was, were you watching WCW at the time?
Oh, WCW. So the very first time, let's say 1980, we watched we had seen the tape, and I was watching regularly, seeing the WrestleMania 2 tape. And so I pick up a magazine that has Hulk Hogan versus Andre the Giant, WrestleMania 3 on the cover. You know, it was Pro Wrestling Illustrated. I never heard of these things. I did not know anything about the after mags. I pick up this thing. And while I'm in there, they keep on talking about this other world champion named Ric Flair, who they kept on saying is better than Hulk Hogan. That was the consensus of the magazine. He was the better. He was better. And in a lot of ways he was, and a lot of ways he wasn't. You know, but that's where it first occurred to me that there was this other thing. And then because I showed the magazine, and I really enjoyed the magazine. I started getting it every month. And a few other magazines from Mapner and of those publications, and showing them to friends. And eventually, so we all started to, thanks to these magazines and thanks to me picking them up, we all started to know what the NWA was and this other champion was, and the Road Warriors. And I remember being so mad when, you know, reading the WWF had you know, debuted Demolition. They're just Road Warrior knockoffs. Because to me, it was the other way around. But you know, it wasn't. So the very first time we were able to see WCW would have been when we were able to start. The one place I remember, it was actually Brett's. He was a friend of mine even back then. And a place near him had brought in some tapes from WCW, or at the time NWA still. And it was like Great American Bash and, you know, Russell War and these things. And we were able to get this, and it was so totally different. It was whereas WWF was this big, cartoony, wonderful production with these big storylines. This was wrestling. This was much closer to Stampede wrestling, but with production values closer to those of WWF. So it really appealed to me right away. NWA. First time I was ever able to regularly watch it, though, would have been when they had a show on TSN called Power Hour that was on, and I think it was probably like 91, just after they had become WCW, and Lex Luger was the champion, Barry Windham was the champion. So Ron Simmons got the belt for the first time from Luger, and Elegante was there, Ric Flair was there, you know, he had Steiners. Yeah, I mean, it was a Sting, of course, you know, it was maybe not as good wrestling as had been happening a few years earlier, but it was different, and it was starting to become more cartoony. It was starting to take on more of a WWF feel, because that was what was the biggest thing, and less of a Stampede wrestling feel, but it was still different. And so that's the first time I was able to experience that. Was probably about 90, somewhere, I would guess about 91, in that range. Yeah.
Shifting slightly along, we look at the launch of the Attitude Era, and one of the big points for the launch of the Attitude Era was the Montreal Screwjob. And you'd mentioned previously that Brett was one of your all-time favorites. What did you think when that happened? Were you watching? Did you see that live? Where was your head at when Montreal Screwjob happened?
Well, what had happened was I had actually, the job I had at the time, I had to work that day. But a guy I used to, a guy, actually the guy who cut my hair became a friend of mine, Sean, and he was a big wrestling fan. And he was quite a bit older than me, but he was, so he would get all the pay-per-views. He was, you know, very successful hairstylist, actually. but a huge, from England, who had grown up watching all the old English wrestling and the rounds and all these different types of, you know, these kind of names that are almost more famous now. These kind of, you know, Billy Robinson and guys like that, right? So he had grown up watching that. So he was always a big wrestling fan. And he used to tape it for me every pay-per-view and then give it to me the next day. And of course, I heard what happened to Brett. It was all over the sports section, and it was all over the, you know, in the radio they mentioned it. And so I knew he had been screwed, but I didn't really know what. So it was the next day when I got that videotape. And I watched it, I think, like three times, trying to figure out what exactly was going on. Was this real or not? At this point, the bubble had already been burst about, you know, even keeping track of thanks to the internet, had already started to come out. And, you know, you saw your first smart marks. And I was, you know, on those websites and whatever when I could. And so you got a sense of the real, you know, the real thing of the booking and the whatever. Up until then, even though I knew it wasn't real, I was able to suspend my belief pretty easily. And of course, the screw job, that's what that really ruined for me was, number one, I figured I'd be able to see Brett. I knew he was going to WCW, but it was the whole being able to suspend belief in reality and go, you know, these guys are really fighting, that I enjoyed up until that point. So it kind of took me a little while to reappreciate wrestling in a different way after that occurred. That's really what it took for me as to appreciate it the way I appreciate it today, which is what I kind of evolved into, and appreciating the booking, the storylines, and the artistry of the matches and these different things. I was starting to do that. I was starting to get interested in psychology. Hey, at this point, I was still wondering if I should get into it, you know, because I loved it. But I wouldn't have had the athleticism to do so, but size, yes, but not the athleticism. So, yeah.
What were your feelings towards Sean after? Like, what do you think of the Montreal Screwjob? Like that happened.
I was already in a lot of ways cheering for WCW because to me, as much as Vince McMahon wanted to promote it, like, you know, these guys, they're taking our stars and they have all this unlimited budget and we're the small company. I mean, to me, WCW was always the underdog because WWF was the big cat in town, you know, they always were. So I was always kind of cheering already. It was only because of Brett that I wasn't. So when Brett left, it was easy for me to turn my loyalties towards WCW, which is what I did. I very much was cheering for them. But I had to admit with the emergence of Austin and Rock, because Sean wasn't there much longer. You know, really, after this happened, he was only there another 6 months. And I already disliked him, but I had to admit it was compelling television. It was what they were doing right afterwards. You know, so I was still now I was watching both products. And then that was when Bret Hart became, you know, they were already starting to show some of WCW Nitro on television. When Bret Hart got there, that was it. I mean, TSN was going to show it. Now TSN was showing Raw live on Mondays and Tuesdays was showing WCW and Nitro. And so, I mean, I would just watch both. And I had to admit, yeah, I mean, 97 was the last year Bret Hart there was incredible year for WWF. They were on fire. The ratings weren't showing it yet, but they were doing great. And 98, yeah, it was exciting and different. And both products were different, but both products were generally in 98, I thought both products were really good. 99, you know, WCW started to show some cracks, but yeah, I mean, how did I feel towards Sean? Well, I mean, I wanted to see somebody beat his ass. I was hoping the Undertaker would at the Royal Rumble, you know, but that's what they wanted.
Oh yeah, absolutely. It's fascinating because that's still before the time I fully got into it. So it's always neat hearing all the what was happening around it. Now you've got WWF, now WWE, that has successfully won the Monday Night Wars. WCW's dead. How do you feel about WWE moving forward from the Monday Night Wars into the mid-2000s?
At the time?
As a viewer, yeah, as a viewer, what are you starting to get bored with it? Are you starting to look for alternatives? Or are you...
No, at the time that the invasion angle was coming up, we were all fantasy booking in our heads what they could do with this thing because there was so much potential. It didn't meet any of that potential. I mean, any of it. Like, any of it. You know, they did such a horrible job, but it was exciting. And there was always the possibility that you would see bigger names, you know, even when, you know, I mean, Scott Steiner came in, you know, but there was still the possibility, you know, eventually they got Flair and then you were like hoping for Goldberg. There was always that possibility that they could just still do something with it for a little while. But the closest I came to quitting was right before WrestleMania 20. And if it wasn't for Chris Benoit, again, I probably would have because he won the belt there. But you know, the product to me was just so poor. I thought the go-home Raw for WrestleMania was like the worst Raw I'd ever seen at the time. So it was – I was hearing about this thing called TNA. I heard about it again on the forums or whatever online. And I heard about the guys that were there and there was people I recognized and I wanted to see it. But I could not and – I also heard about this thing ROH, which didn't sound as exciting as TNA from a stars perspective, but from a wrestling perspective sounded really good. So this is kind of when I started to try and use the internet to try and track down some videos and see, you know, I would torrent because that was the only way we could do it back then. Anything I could to start to try and watch some of this stuff. Eventually I found a bar that found a way to get a feed for TNA pay-per-views. And they blew my mind. And, you know, ROH, and ROH brought in some New Japan, NOAH guys. And that was my first, you know, that's where I knew about Japanese wrestling. And largely I knew about, I got this videotape that was, had Terry Funk versus Mick Foley from Japan, and had an exploding ring match and women's wrestling like I'd never seen before. Just this incredible level, which made me go, wow, women can wrestle just as well as men. And that was a Japanese video I happened to get that, you know, was kind of like, I think I might even have gotten it from that Sean, the hairdresser I mentioned. But this is, you know, my taste started to expand out of necessity eventually, because WWE did start to become boring. It was the only game in town, but it wasn't. The other stuff was out there, but it was really hard to find, the ROH and the TNAs, NOAH. But I started to, these are the companies I started to track down, and Dragon's Gate as well, a little bit from Japan. So, and then I would hear about these guys on the independents, guys that weren't even necessarily in ROH at the time. They were, but they weren't, you know, guys that would wrestle in, guys like Chris Hero, you know. When Hero met Punk was like a 90-minute match I heard about, and it's like, oh, I got to see that, 90 minutes of these two guys wrestling. Like, I haven't heard of somebody go 90 minutes since Stampede Wrestling, the Viet Cong Express against Ben Bassarab and Owen Hart went 90 minutes. I saw that, and that was incredible, right? So, when Hero met Punk was actually a really big match. And also when Danielson met Hero was another one. That was, they would just build like that. When Danielson, like these tapes from like this IWA or whatever, you know? And so this started to expand my mind, and I started to realize wrestling was just as good. The talent was just as good. It was clear that the guys were a lot smaller, but that there was great wrestling out there outside of the WWE at the time, but super hard to find.
Yeah. Now, one of the things that you mentioned, and it ties in with what I was going to ask you next, was you've seen wrestling from Stampede all the way to now. And we've seen almost a size decrease in these guys, where they're not these big, massive Hulk Hogan. Does that bug you at all as a be watching from all the way back there to now? Does size matter when it comes to watching pro wrestling and what's believable to you or not?
No, because I also started watching UFC, and because I was always a boxing fan. So I would watch boxing, study boxing, and see the different weight classes, you know, in the championship fights. And so just the idea of weight classes and skill level and UFC, seeing it also there, seeing that the better guys were often in the smaller weight classes. You know, I mean, you'd rather watch a smaller guy. You'd rather watch a George St. Pierre than one of the big, you know, a Frank Mir, for the most part, his matches are, you know, more interesting, more exciting. So it just made sense to me. And the quality of the wrestling was good. What I missed was the great personalities and the great promos, because it used to be, now you have to wrestle people into the building. You know, with your great wrestling match, that's what's going to draw them in. And back then it was, you had to talk them into the building. But it wasn't really so much a size decrease, and it didn't bother me. What bothered me was just seeing the personalities were just not as good as from a personality standpoint. Luckily, I'm very much a wrestling purist, so for me to transition into watching Daniel Bryan was easy, even though Daniel Bryan is not the personality that Randy Savage was, you know, even at his most charismatic, it's not even close.
When did New Japan finally pop up on your radar, and when did you start watching that?
So we got a membership, me and Addy, when we were doing our show, we got a membership to the Observer Radio. Originally he got the membership and he shared me his login, and I would log in, and now it's been me with it for quite a long time, and he's sharing it, and it would be listening to, you know, I mean, he would always talk about, Dave Meltzer would always talk about All Japan, actually, in the 90s, that was where it was really at, and say that was, you know, where a lot of what became popular over here got its start was in Japan, that Japan was usually 6 months to a year ahead of what was popular in America. And he started talking about this G1, and it was this tournament, and he kept on raving about it. And I knew a few of the guys in there. I knew Shelton Benjamin. I knew, of course, you know, Davey Boy Smith Jr., you know, things like that. So it kind of start. He got it on my radar when he would talk about the G1 and how great it was. And apparently he said that he talked to Daniel Bryan, and Daniel Bryan was like, have you seen any of the G1? It was so great. And I was like, okay, it's impressing Daniel Bryan. I should really check this out. So the next year, New Japan World became available, and I signed up immediately and just to watch the G1. And I've never gotten rid of my membership since, because at the time it was all, there was no English commentary at all, but it was so cool. And thanks to Dave Meltzer, and I would watch it and then listen to Meltzer, and he would kind of take you through some of the stories or angles or backgrounds of the wrestlers that really brought me in pretty easily. So yeah, that would have been, so I would have first got on my radar a year before New Japan World came out, which is what, 2014?
Yeah.
2016,
yep. 2014? 2014.
So it was 2013 would have been when it really got on my radar. And it had probably been good, from what I understand, from about 2000. It's about 2009, 2010 that their renaissance started to happen. So
now we get to like present day, like just present day. There's so much wrestling we could talk about in between. But with looking at where it all is now, what do you think of the current state of pro wrestling? Because some people are really happy with it, some people are mixed, and some people are downright believing pro wrestling's dead. Where do you stand on everything that's happening within pro wrestling? Because we've seen an evolution of the style, and you've seen it probably better than anyone on this podcast. What do you think of everything that's happened in pro wrestling, style-wise, and just everything that's happened up to 2020?
I think it's for me, it's a great time right now. Even though I've really stopped watching WWE, and I don't know what they're going to have to do to get me back. I mean, I'm not into their product. But the fact that I can stop watching WWE and still have a weekly wrestling program that I love, plus all other great wrestling from in other areas, that I can still fill that need without the WWE, 15 years ago, that would have seemed impossible. 15 years ago, the idea that you could stop watching WWE and still and get your wrestling fix every week it just didn't happen. You couldn't think of it happening. It was impossible. You know, even when I wasn't pleased with the WWE, you couldn't stop watching it because it was really the only game in town 15, 20 years ago, you know, after WCW died. So the idea that we're in an era where you can stop watching WWE and still find good wrestling that suits you is fine. Some people think it's the death or whatever. I think it's anything but. I think right now, no matter what your wrestling is that you like, you've never had it more available to you. Of course, the pandemic has changed this to a degree, but you know, we have we can see the British style wrestling that we couldn't see 10 years ago. We can see Japanese wrestling that we couldn't see 10 years ago. We can see Mexican wrestling weekly if we want to. If that's the style, we're into Lucha Libre. We can see sports entertainment done in one style in AEW and then done in another style in WWE. Right now, there's more, you know, more choices in wrestling than there has been in a long time. There may not be a big, you know, it may not have the zeitgeist of the popular culture right now, and the, you know, it may not be capturing attention. It's certainly not as big as it was in the Attitude Era or anything close, or, you know, the Nitro Era, anything like that. But as far as being a wrestling fan and being able to see different wrestling, choose the wrestling I want, this is the best era of all time.
Now, with your nickname, The Futurist, where do you predict things in 5 years? Just a bold prediction. You're the futurist, so I wanted to get your thoughts 5 years from now, pending another pandemic of some kind. Where do you think pro wrestling will be?
I think it'll be just slightly more popular than it is now. Again, what it takes to get to the level of the rock and wrestling era, of the attitude era, it takes those larger-than-life superstars. It's not about the quality of matches. I mean, it takes your Hulk Hogan's, your Austin's, your Rock's, your Randy Savage's, your Roddy Piper's, you know, these characters. And the emphasis right now being so much on wrestling, the odds of a character coming out who's really, really grabs people's attention, it's easier in AEW because Quite frankly, when you look at the characters that have popped in history, they haven't been corporate creations as a large part. They've been the characters have been developed by the performers, you know, to pretty much every degree. The closest maybe not to it would be The Rock, but even that, much more so, there's much more freedom than what you see nowadays. So I don't see it happening in WWE, but that's the problem, is AEW is the company with the most likely chance to do it, but the company with still the smallest platform to get that performer out there into the public. So, you know, it's difficult to see. I think competition is a good thing. I think good quality is out there and available now. I think people continue to open their minds to a New Japan, and it'll slowly continue to grow in North America, and all this will lead to a slightly more popular product in 5 years. I don't see a big comeback coming for WWE, though, because their system is just so broken of how they do things. Even when they're doing things right or something is entertaining, just the overall system, the writers and just the way they do things, the corporation. I don't think wrestling is meant to be run as a corporation, put it that way. Wrestling is not at its best when it's corporate. And nothing is going to change the corporate nature of WWE now. It's become too ingrained in who they are. So that's kind of sad for me in that perspective. I don't see WWE getting wildly more popular, only mildly more popular, or even less popular, possibly. But I think AEW will grow a little bit. I think New Japan will continue to grow. I think we could see a third company, you know, probably not an ROH or TNA, but maybe a third company show up and offer another alternative and become viable to people. Again, not really mainstream necessarily, but a strong national third company for wrestling fans. So I feel, as a wrestling fan, I feel good. If you want to see wrestling get to the level of the Attitude Era, and that's what you love and you feel like it deserves it, I think you're probably going to be disappointed. But if you want to just enjoy the next few years for what they are, I think you can sit back and enjoy them, definitely. I think there's enough there.
All right. Who is your favorite wrestler of all time?
Well, Bret Hart, right? I mean, as I mentioned, it's partially because of how great he was, but also partially because, you know, this is the city, right? That I mean, I live in the city where he's built from, you know, and he as a hero, he represented this city brilliantly, you know, his character and everything like that, that he showed on screen was very admirable. And you know, he's a human being. He's a real life man, has you know, issues as any of us does, but he's still an honest person and is still a person with integrity. And, you know, that can be difficult to find in wrestling historically. So, I mean, Bret Hart, is my all time favorite. You know, I still feel civic pride when I think about him.
I think all Calgarian wrestling fans do. And what is your favorite match of all time?
My favorite match of all time? That's a really, really, really tough question. Because I'm not somebody who gives out star ratings as a general rule, and definitely don't give out high star ratings. I have to admit, the matches we've seen over the last few years have been, you know, probably a higher quality than anything we have seen. So I think I probably would go towards those, but I mean, I've seen so many great matches over the years. I definitely have to tell you that from the King of the Ring, my favorite Bret Hart match is Bret Hart versus the King of the Ring versus Kurt Hennig. That's just a remarkable match. It's a remarkable, remarkable match. But I mean, I have to say that the you know, 60 minute draw, the Kenny and Okada, you know, and then the 62 minute, like that series between Okada and Omega, That's set a new standard. Steve Williams versus Kenta Kobashi. Steve Williams defending the belt against Kenta Kobashi from All Japan is up there. And then just this last year, I have to say the Bucks versus Omega and Page. I mean, I don't think I've seen a better tag match. So, I've been fortunate. I don't know that I have one favorite match, but if you made me in a bubble pick, I probably would go with Henning and Hart. Combination nostalgia and quality. But if you put me in a corner and said, what's the best match? I would probably say Omega and Okada, the 60-minute draw. So, take your pick.
Yeah, I think all those are valid. I thank you for this. This was among all the interviews were great. I love the history. I felt like I learned stuff from listening to you. So I think that's often a comment.
Here's a resource if you want to ask history questions anytime. We always talk about doing history pods and you asking questions and me telling you about stuff. As you see, most of my memory on this stuff is pretty damn good because it was important to me. It made an impression.
I love hearing the journey for wrestling fans, because wrestling to me always felt as though it was a dirty little secret at different points. And just being able to hear other people's journey as being a wrestling fan and finding other fans and conversing and talking and fantasy booking, I love hearing those stories. So I very much appreciate you coming on. I very much appreciate you hosting us for the last 200 episodes, and hopefully there's 200 more with more. We can get to the end of the 5-year question that I ask you, and we'll see if you're right again.
Yeah, we'll see if I was right again. And I just have to say, in the dirty little secret, I definitely grew up in that era where if you were a wrestling fan, people looked down on you and people much more so than you did. And, they looked down on you, or people would say, it's fake, or, and you'd be defending it all the time. And I remember after the Attitude Era started and when it was well known at this point that it wasn't real, and picking up a magazine at a 7-Eleven and some stranger going, oh, that's fake, right? And I was like, yeah, well, I do know that's fake. They know that's fake. They tell us that's fake. He goes, well, you're still going to watch it even if it's fake? You still like it? I go, I don't know. Did you go see a movie this year? Because it wasn't real, most likely. Go see Die Hard? It was fake, asshole. And then and he's like, well, it's not. And I went, it's the same thing. I said, there's a story in the ring. It's two guys. They go in, they fight, they struggle, and then there's a climax and a finish. It's fake, sure, but so is sex with your wife. And that was probably too far. He left, but I don't really regret it, to be honest with you.
I wouldn't regret it either. That's a fantastic answer. Thank you again. We'll keep rolling on with the more interviews and more conversations with wrestling fans.
Here we are with the final interview with the co-host and the co-founder of the One Fall Podcast, Joshua Arbuthnot. Enjoy.
Keep moving along here. We now land at the original co-host of One Fall, Fresh Take, Pep Talk. How long have we been recording podcasts? What, 2014?
Yeah, 2014, so 6 years. Fresh Take itself is showing the corner to 7-8 years. I'm losing track now, but yeah, just turned the corner there. The first show we did was actually at a monumental storyline in WWE history. Our first show was about the Seth Rollins heel turn.
Oh man, yeah, and now there've been dozens of heel turns and babyface mm-hmm. turns and heel turns and babyface oh, turns. Yeah. But I'm
that's
sitting,
just the big show.
I am sitting with and interviewing and talking to about pro wrestling. The one of the co-founders of Fresh Take, Joshua Arbuthnot. How you doing, Josh?
What it is, what it do? I'm doing, I'm good. Big shouts to One Fall and celebrating 200 episodes, first and foremost. Very, very exciting, and I'm excited to do this interview.
The first One Fall that went up on WeTalk, because I think we were doing One Fall before WeTalk, if I remember correctly. Yeah. I think the first one was us singing our praises to Seth Rollins and doing an end of the year show that went up there. And now just motoring along to 200. It's pretty surreal to see how our watching habits and our wrestling opinions have changed and evolved over the years. I'm sure this end of the year show that we'll get to at the end of 2020 is going to be different than what even 2019 had for opinions. So let's jump right in and let's go. How the hell did you get involved in pro wrestling?
It's kind of scattered with everything. There's a bunch of different memories and everything, but I think I remember one of the first times I watched it was we rented a VHS tape of Hulk Hogan versus Macho Man. I want to say that's what Mania is that. Mania 5 or 6? No, it's 5 because he faces Warrior next year. So that was one of the first times. And you know, I was kind of always sporadically watching it here and there. Being an 80s baby, I get a little bit of the rock and wrestling era to a degree. And then it was really about 93, 94 when I really settled in, so about 3 years before the Attitude Era. And it was the build of Owen and Bret. That whole build there really, really got me into this crazy world of professional wrestling. And then watching it all to WrestleMania 10 and wanting to get it on pay-per-view and having to wait. This time, again, you have to wait till the VHS tapes are out, so I had to wait for Blockbuster to get WrestleMania 10 in. You know, you kind of read in some of the magazines when you go to the grocery store what was happening, and it was like, oh, this Owen and Bret match sounds so good. And I remember getting that WrestleMania 10 VHS and being so excited to watch it and finally getting to see that match.
What was
being a kid from Calgary, that, you know, was everything as well.
What was your opinion when you first saw that match? Like, you're watching WrestleMania 10. What did you think of that whole? Did you skip through the card just to get to Owen and Bret?
Oh, no. Everything. I mean, you know, it's funny. I watched it back a while ago, and it's not a particularly great card. And some of the booking now, looking at it, isn't as great. But you know, I think I always hold that in great respect. WrestleMania 9 too. I know a lot of people aren't huge fans of WrestleMania 9, but I remember being a huge fan. We had that on VHS, and Hogan coming back in the ring, I remember cheering so loud. Now you look at the booking, it's terrible, but I mean, you're a kid and Hulk Hogan's a superstar, like he's a superhero to you. It's like, oh yeah, Hulk Hogan, yay! And during WrestleMania 10, like there was the hair match. I think when Jeff got his haircut, again, I think he's facing 1-2-3 Kid. Wrath versus Macho Man, and at the time, you know, Wrath, now you look at him, not great, but you're just so happy to see Randy Savage, and that would be his last effort WWE pay-per-view. But then getting to watch Owen and Bret, and it just seemed like such a different, such a wrestling. And then you also got Razor and Shawn on the ladder match, and my sister at that time, she started falling in love with Shawn because of that, and you just couldn't believe what they were doing in this ladder match with Razor and Shawn. It seemed like, what is this? This is completely different, what these two were doing. I think that really transformed what I thought the world of wrestling was between the Razor and Shawn ladder match to what that could be, and then what Owen and Bret were doing inside the ring.
Now, did you follow that feud all the way? Like, from this point on, were you watching as regularly as possible?
As best as I could, yeah. I mean, I think there was an epiphany at one point. I thought, like, you know, I didn't realize that it was on television right away, so I thought you just get the VHS tapes and that's what you do, right? I'd go and when I was in the grocery stores, I'd read the wrestling magazines and kind of keep along that way, but I wasn't really informed. I mean, I think WrestleMania 10, I'm like 6 or 7 years old at that point, so I'm not too informed really of what the world really is at this point as far as like weekly television, and I don't even know what what the television schedules are or anything like that, right? I think the only thing I knew that was on, yeah, so I'm 9 years old at that point, by the way, for WrestleMania. Like, I'm just kind of coming to my own and recognizing sports. I mean, that year you have Vancouver and the Rangers and the Stanley Cup. and you have the Knicks in the playoffs. All the OJ stuff is going on at that point, where I'm kind of comprehending a lot of the stuff that's going on and have a pretty good memory of it. But I didn't know what was on television. I remember just one day channel surfing, and there was Owen or Brett in their King of the Ring outfit. I can't remember which one. I'm like, holy hell, this is on television too? So it was kind of that realization, because I didn't really know. I knew that Stampede Wrestling had happened here. My dad told me stories about going there, and so did my Uncle Derek. My dad actually went to school with the Harts, actually dated one of the Harts for 2 weeks, weirdly enough. So I kind of got an idea of what the whole world of Stampede Wrestling was and everything like that. But it took until, I don't know, about I was 10 or 11 to really know that this was on television weekly, and then started kind of getting hooked from that point. Before that, though, it was just catching up in the grocery stores, reading the magazines, and then getting the VHS tapes when I could, when I was allowed. And video games as well. That was a big part of it, too, playing the video games. So some of the characters I wouldn't know, I would know from the video game before I'd ever know until watching a pay-per-view.
Oh, wow. No, shuffling along with time, you mentioned that, and this is one of the points that everyone that I've talked to we've hit on so far, is the Attitude Era.
Mm-hmm.
When that happened, what did you think? Because you're obviously growing up while this is happening.
I'm in junior high and high school, so I'm at the peak of this. I'm doing Suck It to my grandparents. We all are. It was the biggest thing on earth. There was nothing bigger than it. I think the only thing bigger was maybe Michael Jordan, in my world at least. Even in school, in junior high and high school, like, there was nothing bigger than WWE and WCW at that time. You had an NWO shirt, you were made. If you had, like, you know, a shirt like an NWO shirt at that time was as big as, especially specifically for the male side, was as big as having like a FUBU or a Rockaware shirt on, or a DX shirt. Like, it was that big. And I remember the show coming up here to Calgary and how big of a deal it was. We had assemblies for our prep rally, and people would pretend to be The Rock or Booker T or Stone Cold. We're talking about at that time 9 million people. Like, it was the antithesis of the main thing to watch on a Monday night. I remember having basketball practices and having to tape it again on VHS, and you had to preset the recorder, which was never an easy thing to do. And remember one day we had a bad loss and we had to do Suicides, and I was so mad. I'm like, well, I'm not going to get home in time for Raw. I forgot to tape it. And I was so pissed off. And that time, internet is still very much in the infancy. So if you miss it, then you're screwed. There is no watching the highlights on YouTube or reading what happened on the internet. It's very scarce to find out what happened. You know, you'd have to hope that maybe TSN would show a Raw replay, which I don't think they did very often. If they did, sometimes it was a 2 at night.
Okay. So your junior high school, which side are you on? WWF or
WWF? I mean, you know, today, even with this AEW side, I'm still going to always be that side, because I rocked with it. But there's a lot of stuff in WCW I loved. I loved DDP. And luckily, later on, I was able to interview him, which was cool. I've always been a Hogan fan. Watching the NWO was awesome. They were always the coolest. I think even cooler than DX. NWO was, especially when I went to the Wolfpack, that was super cool. There was always a super coolness about WCW until it wasn't. And then when you start getting DX and you start getting what Austin was doing and what The Rock was doing, then there was this pendulum shift around, obviously, that 97-98 side, where things just turned around, and then you started falling in love with what WWE did with the ancillary characters, the side characters, the D'Lo Browns or the Road Dogs. They did such a much better job in the undercard of Al Venus, Ken Shamrock, of making you care about those characters, where WCW really struggled to have those guys.
What now, the underbelly, like the undercard of WCW, were you really following them, or were you just following the main event, the whole game?
I tried to. I mean, I fell in love with the cruiserweight division early. Again, watching with my sister, she became a huge fan of Rey Mysterio. So by proxy, we kind of root for Rey, and then she became a fan of Kidman. So we would follow them. And then, you know, when the flock started with Raven and Kidman and Perry Saturn and Loki, we really got into what the flock was doing, and I liked a lot of the guys in the flock. And I specifically, you know, my sister became such a big fan of Kidman, we're like, oh, okay, well, maybe the flock can be something. I like this Perry Saturn guy. I mean, I really liked what Chris Benoit was doing every single week. I'm like, this guy is just different. He's an actual good wrestler in the ring. He's not that entertaining. And then Chris Jericho, you know, he always just kind of made me laugh. I wouldn't say like he particularly stood out to me, but in the sense, I'm like, this guy, every week he comes on television, like, he doesn't stand out to be a super duper star, but I'm like, there's a chance there, but he, you know, this guy makes me laugh whenever he comes on. So there was always kind of glimpses there of guys that Eddie Guerrero, Chavo with the horse was always funny. There were always glimpses, but when you watched WWF and you saw, you know, you could think, oh, D'Lo Brown could win the WWF championship. They could make it work that D'Lo could be conceived to do that if they wanted to push him hard enough. That was the difference. They never made you believe that Ray or Kidman or any of those guys could get to that level. Even like when Benoit finally did it at the end, or even when Booker started doing it, it's like, oh, I guess they're just desperate now because this is the way that they made the guys look at that time. But you always rooted for these under guys there because you got so tired of the top guys in WCW. But WWF did such a good job of building those storylines and the rivalries and rooting for Austin or rooting for Rock. And I think the WWF at the time, too, you know, you have the East Coast and West Coast rap war. I thought they did a little bit better job of infusing kind of that hip-hop culture in the right way with DX and other, you know, sense of that and infusing the South Park side of that. And NWO tried to do it a little bit then, but it was, again, all for naught and terrible pushes. I remember when Goldberg suffered that loss and watching that and Scramble pay-per-view and just being so bummed out. I'm like, okay, this is really stupid. He used a cattle prod. And that was like the first time I kind of, in my mind, criticized wrestling. I was like, that was dumb. And then I remember watching the finger poke of doom the next day. I'm like, uh-huh. So, yeah. And I'm someone that stayed with WCW to the very end watching it because I was excited to watch both, but it was always about WWE.
Now, one of the big points during that Attitude Era was the Montreal Screwjob. What do you remember from that time?
Again, didn't have pay-per-view at that time, so I remember going to school that next day, and I had a buddy that did, and he would just like, hey, like, this is crazy, like, Shawn Michaels did this to Bret, and I had watched the SummerSlam pay-per-view at a friend's house. And we all thought that, you know, that I think that we thought that Taker was going to win the belt there. Because you would, again, internet culture is very kind of around at this time. So you kind of hear rumblings about stuff of like, oh, and, you know, you're in Calgary. So there are some rumblings about that. That old Brett is probably leaving the company and going to WCW. You heard that in the summertime. I'm like, oh, so Undertaker is going to win. And then when Undertaker didn't win, it was like, okay, this is curious. So I wonder where we're going to go with everything. And then I got to Survivor Series. Again, I didn't watch it in person, but I just remember everyone at school that did see it was going like, oh, my God, like, this was crazy. Like, I know it's fake, but, like, you have no idea. And I just remember being so glued to that Raw that day to be like, can I get any idea what happened in this scenario of them doing with Bret? And, I mean, for a long time, I mean, you know now, I consider Shawn the greatest professional wrestler of all time, but I had a lot of hate in my heart for Shawn Michaels for a long time for that.
If you're born in Calgary, you are not a fan of Shawn Michaels at all.
No.
Moving forward a little bit, we get to the end of the Monday Night Wars. It's done. WWF has this infusion of talents. It's shifting to WWE. What did you think of the mid-2000s for professional wrestling? Because that was really a transition time. And yeah, the indies were still not what they are today or even 10 years after that. What did you think of what WWE did at that point?
So a few things. Number one, this is my favorite era. SmackDown 6 era here, even though, like, and this is the first time when I start, you know, trying out torrents and stuff and find, because we didn't get we didn't get the score, which had SmackDown. So that's how I had to watch SmackDown, or I had to read spoilers on SmackDown. And whenever I could watch SmackDown, I was like so excited. And I just thought the wrestling was better. That's when I started getting infused with the wrestling's better. Seeing Eddie Guerrero, seeing Jericho, seeing Benoit. And I remember the invasion before that happened and just being so excited and really watching it with some buddies. And when they had the WCW guys come out and attack the WWE guys and the ECW guys turned over, we just erupted. It was crazy. Just, we were just like, wow, this is unbelievable right here. And then you get to that 2002 to about 2006 period, where it's just phenomenal. I mean, you had Kurt at that time putting in everything. Brock was at his finest. And again, you had Benoit and Eddie and Jericho and Edge at that point. I think you just had such a great infusion of actual wrestling. You could start appreciating it. And you mentioned, but the indies, you know, you start hearing these guys' names. TNA is popping up. You keep on hearing about this guy, AJ Styles. You keep on hearing about this guy, Samoa Joe. keep on hearing about this guy, CM Punk, Christopher Daniels, Loki. You keep on hearing about all these guys. And then, you know, obviously TNA starts bubbling up around 2005. And you get a look at Samoa Joe. And then I remember when Kurt jumped to TNA and how crazy that was. But you're kind of, I remember even with the Edge and the Matt thing, when he has the Ring of Honor shirt, it's like, what's Ring of Honor? It's like, oh, that's where that Samoa Joe and CM Punk guy are. And so you're kind of getting the bubbling of there, but you're also just getting such quality content as far as matches. And then you're getting a personality like a Cena. You're getting to see young guys like Randy Orton, like Shelton, Brock, Batista, all kind of form. You really hate Evolution with Hunter. You really start kind of investing in that time period. I know a lot of people like the Attitude Era because of everything it is, but as far as the wrestling goes, that era may be the best to me, or at least one of the best. I mean, now everyone's such a good wrestler, but at that time, come with the Attitude Era where there's a lot of, like, you know, storyline, Vince Russo era type of stuff, and then it's just like opening your eyes, like, oh my God, what is all this?
Yeah. Let's jump into one of the main things that we have bonded over and talking about. And it's a little wrestling.
Brian Danielson was on that or Ring of Honor side too. I don't want to forget Brian Danielson either. Or Nigel McGuinness.
Let's jump into 2011 with a little pipe bomb.
Yep.
Phil Brooks, who for better or worse has a reputation these days, but when did you notice CM Punk? What did you think of the pipe bomb?
And then I had kind of heard about him going on some of the forums. And, you know, I started watching, you know, a few torrents because that's how I was watching Impact at that time because we didn't get it up here in Canada right away. So watching a few torrents to watch Impact. And then I started watching a few Ring of Honor things with him and Samoa Joe because, you know, knowing Joe now from TNA at this point, I'm like, this guy's pretty good. And then I had heard that he went to ECW. I'm like, I'm going to keep an eye on him. And automatically just being attracted to his in-ring style, his personality right away in ECW. I even remember, like, kind of, you know, still kind of being a little bit of a mark. And when he joined the New Breed, if you remember the New Breed group in ECW, I almost was like bummed. I'm like, no, he joined the New Breed. You can't do that. And then I remember like being happy when he turned. Because I know, you know, I'm one of the few people that kind of championed that ECW. I think there were some fun things that came out of that ECW. I actually like the New Breed storyline. I like the storyline with him. And then you get all the way to the pipe bomb. And it completely, that kind of revived how I felt as a kid all over again about wrestling. And I haven't had that feeling really since of everything was going on. You know, the Nexus stuff was going on and off. I had gone to the pre-Survivor Series shows up here in Alberta. Got a chance to see The Undertaker finally. I got the chance to see Punk. And then, you know, he comes back a year later, pre-pipe bomb, and it was entirely different what Punk was then to what he was after the pipe bomb. It was ridiculous. I've never felt anything like it. And friends of mine that had gone and seen shows with Rock and Austin, which I wasn't lucky enough, or even Hogan, said it was at that level for the atmosphere he had. He completely changed, like, my feeling about wrestling. Every single time he was on something, I wanted to root for him and cheer him on. And that you know, while the summer of Punk didn't go exactly what we all hoped it would have, I just don't remember feeling as much excitement. I mean, I still to this day remember that show of doing my normal PVR watch and skipping through. It's Cena, R-Truth in this table match. Okay, who wins? And then you're going through and you like, oh, wait, is that Punk's wearing an Austin shirt and now he's doing a promo? Okay, well, I guess I'll check this promo. And I just remember mid-promo getting up. I'm like, what is going on here? This is completely different. Like, I always, you know, liked him beforehand with the Straight Edge Society and everything like that. But it's like, holy hell, like the switch has just been completely flipped now for this guy.
It really sent him into another stratosphere. And now, you know, everything that happened. I remember us talking to like 2 a.m. when the Colt Cabana Punk podcast dropped, just everything that came from that. It was just so crazy because you look at, because Pipe Bomb's 2011, and when is he done?
He's done 2013. I'll never forget it because I remember I was you know, at college at the time, and I was heading out to do a shoot. And I was just on Raja, which is
still running.
I was following Raja in like 1998, 99. That's how I found out Taz was going to WWF, was from Raja. And just kind of reading some of the stuff on there. And it said, like, Punk got in a fight with Vince McMahon last night. I'm like, oh, that's not good. And that's why he wasn't there. And I was like, oh, I wonder if he's leaving the company. And then just talking to a few buddies that were fans at that point, I'd be like, no. Like, this is the work. This is the work. I'm like, I don't know. I think this is serious. And then, obviously, you know, the whole Heyman, when he came out thing, he'd be like, holy hell, he's not coming back. And then, obviously, the podcast comes out. And now we're today WWE officially, which is a happy birthday, which now any nugget you get, everyone's like, oh, it's pretty crazy where you get to that point. It's kind of our version, some way, of Bret Hart. You know, yeah. I remember when, you know, they teased Bret coming back, and they did that head to head with TNA in 2010. And in some ways, the Punk coming back is kind of our, this generation's now version of that. But the groundwork that he laid, I don't think can be understood. It's not a word, but just where we are now. You mean Retribution isn't great, but, you know, a guy like Mustafa Ali leading that, everything that happened with Daniel Bryan, you know, where we are with some of the talents in the company that they are, the people that they hired. I think Punk didn't get the exact change that he wanted, but he did get a big chunk of it, and that is because of him.
Yeah. I think Punk owes a lot. We owe a lot to Punk, just the state. The other big point, because I always look at the big points for wrestling fans, at least for me, and a lot of these are shared with you. One of which was Survivor Series, going to see that live, my first ever pay per view, which was with you. And the other around that time, and I consider this slightly bigger than that, is torrenting the first English commentary for Wrestle Kingdom.
Yeah.
What led to that, and then what subsequently led to following New Japan?
So I think Jarrett had left TNA at that point, right?
Yep.
And there was a big thing about this Bullet Club, and AJ went there, and I was a huge fan. Much like with Punk, I always loved AJ Styles. Whenever I watched TNA, he was someone that no matter what I did, I just wanted to watch AJ Styles. He automatically fell, and part of it too was because for a while when I had my fake wrestling name, my name was J Styles. So I kind of like, oh, this guy's AJ Styles. And just, you know, he was super exciting. He got entertaining. I really liked him with Christian. I want to say that him and Christian together in TNA was one of my favorite things. But you heard AJ was going there, and you kept on hearing about this Bullet Club, this Kenny Omega, Carl Anderson. I was like, Luke Gallows was with Punk, is there now. And, you know, you heard Generation Me went there. I was like, okay, Generation Me, who gives a shit about them? They were terrible in TNA. But you kind of realize that's more the booking, and that's kind of what TNA did. Okada. But I think you and I were like, okay, well, it's on pay-per-view. There's some people that we know there, like AJ, Jeff Jarrett. I think Shelton was in a match at that point, in one of the eight-mans or something. So we're like, hey, let's just go check this out. It's in English commentary. And we walked away. I walked away being like, that Nakamura guy, he's pretty exciting and cool. You walked away with Kenny Omega on the brain, saying he could be the biggest star, which is a great flex by you. And yeah, I think the rest is kind of history of where everything with that show went. It was definitely a transformative show of like, this is completely different. This is and you know, at the time, I think for a lot of North American type of fans that really hadn't seen Japanese wrestling, I had kind of gone back in the day and seen some Misawa, some Tenryu stuff back in the day when we had some of the tapes, the WCW 93 show. I had seen that, but getting to watch the modern era. And, you know, I think we had heard the name Nakamura, you know, Prince Devitt was a name that got thrown around. He wasn't obviously on the show, but we had heard those names, and then getting to see everything in live action, it was like this entirely different world was opened up. And you came for AJ, you came to see names like a Shelton Benjamin or a Jeff Jarrett that you knew, but you walked away with so much more.
Yeah. I mean, you look at it, the top three matches are AJ Styles versus Tetsuya Naito, The incredible match between Shinsuke Nakamura and Kota Ibushi, and then the incredible, one of the best feuds of all time, Hiroshi Tanahashi versus this young upstart that TNA didn't know what to do with, Kazuchika Okada.
Yeah, and I remember too, like, that's the Kato guy? I'm like, this guy sucks. Because again, my North American viewing of this guy was the Green Hornet sidekick with Joe, and he was terrible, much like Generation Me, terrible. But then you realize TNA doesn't know how to book.
And then we skip forward a couple years to now. What do you think of the current state of pro wrestling? Everything that's happened, the speaking out era has obviously taken a massive chunk out of a certain side of pro wrestling, and rightfully so. We're sitting here as we record this. Japan's firing, just finished the G1. WWE just finished Hell in a Cell. And this little upstart company is celebrating a year of existence with All Elite Wrestling. What do you think of where we're at?
I think in some circumstances, the wrestling business has never been in a better place. It's much more inclusive, much more open now. If you don't like the WWE product, you don't have to watch it. You can go and watch. You know, we'll go watch TNA. They just had Bound for Glory, but you wouldn't know because no one's really talked about anything outside of the production issues from what I've heard. But if you want to, you got TNA with a nice young roster and some people that you know there to a lesser degree. You can go watch New Japan, who just had a great G1. You can go watch AEW. There is there's MLW. There's other indies. There's a melting pot right now to watch. You know, you're not just limited to one company. I think that's the and also the inclusive side for the women. Women's wrestling is at a high arc than it's ever been, right? We have some of the greatest women wrestlers ever, where that used to be such a bath and break, and you know, the transformative match of Sasha and Bayley, which will always be in my top five for, you know, you and I got a chance to see that, and just how much that changed wrestling, and that match will always stick high with me for what it did. So I think we're in a much more inclusive era where women's wrestling, women's storylines, women wrestlers matter so much more, to the point they had it's one of the best pay-per-views of the past decade. And the side of the opportunities to watch other wrestling are out there. You don't have to watch WWE if you don't like it. You don't have to watch AEW if you don't like it. There is so many things to go around and bite your teeth into that you just didn't have a few years ago. So I think it's in a good market right now. And, you know, the ability to watch it. I talked about, you know, in the early 2000s, oh, I'm going over in basketball practice, or I'm out and I'm going to miss Raw or Nitro at that point. Now it doesn't matter. I can go and PVR it. I can watch it on the network 2 weeks later. I can watch it on Hulu. I can watch the clips on YouTube for really most things other than really New Japan. The way to find wrestling and the discussion you can have isn't just limited to a message board anymore like I had growing up. You have Reddit, you have Twitter, you have all the social media. I think it's in a great place right now.
Yeah. Final two questions. I've been asking everyone this. Who is your favorite wrestler of all time?
Favorite wrestler of all time is CM Punk.
CM Punk?
Yeah.
I expected that. And the last one, favorite match of all time? All
right, CM Punk / Sasha Banks. It's a tie with the two of them. And Grand Slam champion Sasha Banks, I should say. And then my favorite match? That one's tough. Taker and Shawn, definitely the tie. But I think I have to go with Owen and Brett. Because that's really the first match that really sunk me into this different wavelength of things and how it could be done. And Sasha Bailey's up there. Joe and Kurt and TNA. Love that. There's a few G1 matches that stick out. One thing I do want to talk about with the Japan stuff really quick before the Osprey and Ricochet match, for everything that got, but that kind of just really changed my mind about everything too, about the athleticism that we're entering with wrestling. That is a match that I really loved, was Osprey and Ricochet. That particular one that got all the attention of the late great Vader and everything.
Oh yeah, it definitely changed. It felt like a flip in the switch.
So I'd go Punk and Sasha Banks for female and male. Favorite match, Owen and Brett. And favorite show, if you wanted to ask that, it may actually be NXT. I think it would be New Orleans, the one with the ladder match, and yeah, that was a pretty good show. Or, you know, there's so many good ones. Maybe even WrestleMania 21 is up. There's a few, but yeah, man, it's been a fun ride.
Yeah, and I mean, we'll hopefully be marching on for another 6 years, and I'm sure that things will be different in 6 years, completely different. But who would imagine AEW existing? Who would imagine Japan being something that was regularly watched? Like, it just,
or even TNA still being around. How many podcasts have we done doing the TNA death podcasts?
Oh, TNA is dead. These wrestlers, because at that time, like, NXT was probably both our favorite shows.
Yeah.
Before AEW really came onto the scene. And it's interesting just to see the transformation of NXT. But you'd be like, all right, how many of these guys will go to NXT? How many of these guys will go to the main roster? Yeah, no, they can pick the bones of TNA, and now TNA is still going strong. I mean, the ironic thing is we're probably going to have The Rock appear on TNA before he appears on WWE television in the year 2020.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy because he's doing the Ken Shamrock Hall of Fame.
Yep.
Yeah, it's been a great ride. I mean, obviously now I'm at a point where I'm much more, you know, with my job and everything like that, if we didn't have the ability to compose wrestling like we do now, I would say, like, I wouldn't be watching it as regularly as possible. Obviously, with COVID and everything that's happened, you know, with my life and having to cover sports, and it's just been so crazy, it's definitely taken away my ability to really follow a product a lot. But thankfully, we have the abilities to, you know, watch stuff on YouTube, to watch something like MGF and Jericho. And I'll end up with that, you know, something like that. At the end of the day, this really is sports entertaining. The part of it I always will like is in the ring. That's always the most important part of this, is the in-ring and the athleticism. But at the end of the day, this is something that you sit back, you turn your brain off, you have a good time and enjoy yourself, no matter what it is. We've seen penises cut off. We've seen corpse raped. We've seen a lot of weird shit. We've seen Viagra on a pole. We've seen spikes pressed into a coffin. So if we get a Broadway show and one thing, it's like, this is nothing new. At the end of the day, it's something you turn your brain off for. You have a good time. You laugh. And remember the time Hulk Hogan fell off, the giant fell off a building and was back 2 minutes later, or a mummy humped Hogan pretending to give him a bear hug. It's all ridiculous. It's all stupid. And it's professional wrestling. And I'm happy to be part of this crazy world and get to enjoy it and get to come on the pod and talk to you about it once in a while.
No, this was good. Thank you, Josh, for the interview.
Cheers, everybody.
And that is the end of the 200th episode. Thank you, everyone, for coming on. Thank you, everyone, that has been supporting this podcast since the beginning. And here's to 200 more. Thank you.
Goodbye! And good night, Ben!